Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend Confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right, Weekend Confirmed time. I am Garnet Lee, back in the saddle, so to speak, right here at the head of the table.
He's where actually sitting in a saddle right now.
In a saddle. It was a weird request that you made from Brooklyn to bring a saddle in, but whatever. Do what you got to do. Hey.
Yeehaw.
Do you like the chaps?
Yes, he's back, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. There you go.
And that's Mr. Zav D'Amatos, who did an outstanding job last week hosting.
Thank you very much. I told Jeff that I'd say this because he's not here. It's Zav 1X No Z, since it kind of rhymes with
Or as we nicknamed him this week, Tag.
Tag. I don't know. Yeah,
Zav Tag.
I don't even remember how that came. Oh, because I was talking about tagging on checknews.com, which is a website that you probably should be visiting.
And he was very excited because we have tags working again, and he's all about his story tags.
I am all about my story tags, coming from a long line of tagging in my generation. My grandfather was a tagger. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this.
I was wondering where you were going.
I don't know. I started doing something, and I'm like, this is not going anywhere.
Hey, down at the end of the table, we have Indie Jeff here.
Hey, everybody. You know, it's kind of weird to be the only Jeff here on the show today.
It is. You know what's funny? I was just this week, I told someone that me and you would never be on a show together. It was like a Pokeroo situation. It's a Canadian reference people might not understand.
A what?
It was this TV show where, like, there was this guy in a costume that one person would always be like, oh, he was just here. And then that person would, like, leave, and then they would switch costumes. Anyway, it's a Canadian show. But, like, I was telling people.
Apparently.
The whole thing is, like, someone was saying, I think you guys are the same person because you're never on the same show together. I'm like, we're never going to be on the same show together. This week, we're on the same show together.
That's right.
It's kind of like saying it's a public access show.
It's like having Spider-Man and Peter Parker on the same show.
Weird. Yeah. By the way, Jeff Mattis is no ends, two T's.
Yes. And an A on each side. But that's pretty complicated.
Here's what we got coming up in the show today. I want to start off by thanking Robert Ashley and Sam. I don't know Sam's last name as well, so I have to look it up real quick. Sam Freigard. Hopefully I got one of those pronunciations right. Anyway, better known as I Come to Shanghai, who have their new recording out. I guess, do we still call these things albums? I guess people do.
Sure.
Anyway, we've got a track from that, which is awesome for a number of reasons. First of all, back in the day at 1UP, the very first time that I really got into, like, I've always been into music, but the first time I got into having music in the show was when they put out their first disc, and Robert and I were talking, and we wound up promoting it on Listen Up then, and so it was really cool. As soon as I saw this, I was like, hey, dude, let's do it again. So if you have not already checked it out, please go check out Eternal Life Volume 1, Track 1, which is what we'll have. You can get it off their website. It's a pay as much as you want.
Yep.
And I think after you listen to it, you'll want to pay because it's very, very good stuff. These guys, yeah, it's good stuff. I think you'll like it. Also see here that our very own producer, Mr. Del Rio, has a show coming up. I mean, he like Ooh, actually what? Really like, yeah.
Nice.
That's crazy. Yeah. So if you are in the Los Angeles area, Wednesday, July 27th, he's going to be at a sports bar at Pico and La Brea starting at 10 p.m. with David Ruffin Jr., Mr. Perkins, and Longevity. So there you go. All kinds of stuff coming up. We've got lots of games to talk about. I got to spend a good deal of time at the Q Games office in Kyoto. They were very, very gracious hosts. Got to play a ton of Lifelike, which is really cool because I was dying to know what that's all about, which we'll talk about because it takes a little while. Got to play some more side-scroller and
Pixel Junk. Both of
those those are Pixel Junks. Did you see, like, Klepek this morning was like, dude, Lifelike's not a game. Which is true. It is not.
It's exactly how Klepek sounds too.
It is not a game. Well, I mean, he was emulating all the people who uppity about, like, is it a game?
Of course,
a game, whatever. And then I also got to see the brand new announced Pixel Junk Monsters for social networks, which is very cool to see more games coming to social networks. I'm very curious to see, among other things, where they wind up putting this thing. I mean, they're not, it's seemingly, you know, they're being very vague about it, not committed to Facebook, I guess.
I thought Civ World would really bring me into it, but I mean, depending on how that turns out, that might be the game that makes me play some social games.
Yeah, you played some Civ World.
Yeah, I played a little bit of it. I was in the beta, and we talked about it a couple weeks
ago. Yeah.
But yeah, that didn't really rope me into the whole social gaming stuff, but if you know, this ends up being as good as it potentially could be based on the other games that Pixel, the Q Games guys have made, then this could be the thing.
You know, the conceptual stuff that I saw from where they're coming at it, that, you know, how they're approaching this thing really makes a lot of sense. I like what they've done. So we'll talk about that.
Cool.
And of course, all three of us up on the Bastion, Supergiant Games, just, I mean, it's not a secret. We all think they knocked it out of the park. Yeah. So we'll have a Bastion love fest and, you know.
Actually, I thought it was horrible.
You're fired. Wait, you're already fired, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. I'm going to keep firing you. This can be that can be a new meme. What else we got? Jeff got to play some Space Marines multiplayer.
I did, yeah.
And I'm anxious to hear, because I haven't got any stick time. Have you gotten to play it any?
No, I mean, the only time I've ever seen it was at preview events where they were driving the ship, and it always looked interesting. And it's funny, every single multiplayer preview for that game was like surprisingly good. So I want to hear why it was surprisingly good to you.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, we'll get into that.
So there you go with that. Listener feedback coming up in the third segment. Yeah, you guys didn't have much to say last week, so that's kind of empty. And then we've got news. There is some stuff here. By the way, we're not going to do the throw Andy Reid under the bus segment.
If you watch the video, it's going to be throwing your read under the train. Because
it's just what we're like at trains.
Everyone here loves trains.
Interestingly enough,
choo-choo.
though that thread went rather, you know, steered rather off the cliff quickly on mm-hmm. Gaff, on Shaq News, it was really split. It was quite well split. And there were a lot of people who were interested. So, you know, I think that it's interesting. Anytime you bring someone in who polarizes things like that, at least it means that we had good conversation. It means that we were bringing something unique to the table. And I like that. That's
what I loved about that show. I mean, me and Andy obviously didn't agree on a lot of stuff. But I mean, if we all agreed on the same shit and I had the same viewpoints as people listening, then why would you listen to this?
But let me ask you guys a question. Why did you let him get away with that Nintendo bashing? Come on.
Every single time that he said, like, Nintendo does the same shit every time, we brought up Metroid Prime, we talked about Pikmin, we talked about the GameCube was great when he said it wasn't. Like, I think now you're making me throw him under the bus by doing this.
No, I'm not doing that.
I did not agree with a lot of
that
shit.
What I'm saying is that I was in the listener's role, sitting there in the train car, like, yelling in my mind, God damn it!
Which I think someone won a bet on Jack, because I think someone on Jack actually said that they can hear you screaming in the background.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't think you were alone there.
Well, I mean, you got to hold the feet to the fire a little bit to stir the conversation up, right? I mean, I think that some of the points were defensible, but others of them, I mean, I don't know. We can talk some about that. You know, I want to talk also about the huge sales disappointments for Child of Eden and Shadows of the Damned.
Disappointing.
And also in the larger sense of things, like what happened with those. And then, as we said in the pre-show, if you're not watching the pre-show videos, by the way, you should watch pre-show video on YouTube or our Facebook page. But Zav's got a fat stack of news.
Fat stack. Did we mention that Jeff Cannata is at Comic-Con right now and that's why he's not on the show?
No, screw that guy.
Okay. Screw him. Anyway, but if you're at Comic-Con and you want to hear Jeff Cannata and the dulcet tones of Jeff Cannata, Danny Trachtenberg, and Alex Albrecht, they're doing their panel Friday night at Comic-Con, so make sure to check those guys out.
I believe
out.
It's room 7AB.
Sure. I have no idea what room
Look
it is.
Look for it in your Comic-Con schedule of events.
Please do.
All right, so let's dive into it. Since we tease it off first, I might as well jump right into the Pixel Junk stuff. I want to go right into Lifelike, because there's a ton to talk about there. So, Lifelike, very little was known about it. You know, they originally did that video with Bion and the programmer at the time, Omar, out in the middle of the woods, dancing around to music. And right. You were like, what the hell is this? It's really, right. It was clever, but it was, you know, weird. And then they did this demo at E3, and they had us upstairs in a meeting room. And Bion demoed the game for us,
okay. Or
actually the music experience device. And I think there was a disconnection there between those guys who have been working on it and in the midst of it so much, who are enjoying it and get it, and how out of left field it feels for someone who hasn't had a inkling of what it was about.
Right.
So, you know, people wound up as confused as, you know, even like, you know, Ben over at Ars Technica was like, I don't even know what to make of this thing. I mean, taking out frustrations because you don't get it is kind of silly. So let's talk about what it is. So one of the big disconnects is that we saw Bion, and when he was playing it, you know, using the Move controller and things happening in the screen with this visualizer. Okay, you are not using the Move controller to do anything with anything on the screen. The screen is simply a representation of the music you're making.
Like a visualizer.
It's just a visualizer.
Okay.
There is no one-to-one between anything that happens on the screen and what you're doing with the Move control.
But there's still a lot of crazy visual stuff going on screen?
There's a ton of crazy.
Okay,
I mean, keep in mind, you know, Q Games has done all kinds of crazy stuff, including they did a bunch of they did all of that background animation for the PS3 at Cross Media Bar.
Oh, okay.
They do all kinds of tech stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hardcore coders.
Yep.
So they're very into that stuff. And they're very into the visualizer part of it. And so they have people working on that. The music part of this, though, is the part you interact with.
Okay.
So let me see if I can explain it to you. It helps tremendously if you have a basic core understanding of the way music works with beats and measures. Because the entire game is built around sequencing music measures.
Right.
So Bion has put together already a couple and is contributing more songs. And he's making music, because, you know, he's a music producer. Mm-hmm. And he's making the music in 8-bar segments, each of which has 4 components to them. There's a kick drum, there's a hi-hat, there's a kick drum, hi-hat, there's a bass line, and there's like a synth, which is closest to like a melody sort of line. And these songs are then comprised of 4 different sections or 4 different musical themes running 8 bars each in each type. So there are 4 synth patterns, there are 4 drum patterns, there are 4 bass patterns, and there are 4 hi-hat patterns. What you do with the controller is pick which ones to bring in when. So I start the game. And I got to play this thing. So it took me a while to get my head around this thing. Because
listening to you describe it, it's a little like, whoa, that's...
So some of the things you can't do, so I can give you a little framework, is you can't change the tempo of the songs or the music. You can't change the pitch or modulation of the music pieces. However, there's a tremendous amount of music adjustment you can do to the pieces. We'll get to that part in a second. Let's just do the basic building blocks. So you start the game. Boom. You start a track. There's nothing playing. You then use, so on the Move controller, you have the 4 classic Sony buttons. You know, you have the X, the square, the triangle, and the circle. Mm-hmm. Each one of those corresponds to one of the types of music. So, for instance, X is the hi-hat.
Right.
When you press X, you are now in control of the hi-hat phrases. Now, using the Move controller, there are 4 quadrants in front of me, up and right, up and left, down and right, down and left. Those are the 4 different hi-hat sound phrases. What I do now is I press the X button. I move the wand in the direction of the phrase that I want to bring in. And then I pull the trigger. And now I move my hand down. Let's say I move my hand down into the right to pull that phrase. As soon as the Move controller starts to vibrate, that means I'm on it. Mm-hmm. I pull the trigger. I pull the track up into the middle of the screen. And it starts playing.
So you're basically like copy and paste or cut and pasting into... Taking it out of these corners and building your song.
And I can build it however I want. So
Let's
say, you know, I want to start off building with, you know, like I like drum and bass a lot. So let's say I want to start off building with a hi-hat. So I like pick my hi-hat and I go bring it up here and I go, right? And then I think, okay, you know, I think I'd like to bring in a little bass next.
Mm-hmm.
So now I hit the square button, which switches me to bass, and the color on the Move controller changes, so you know you can start to learn like, oh, yellow is hi-hat, blue is bass, red.
Oh, okay.
So you can get like a visual representation, right? And so now I've got bass, and I grab one of my bass tracks and pull that in. So now I've got, right? And I'm starting to build it up the way I want to.
I'm just thinking this is fodder for when Dave does his next remix. You're basically creating the next, yeah.
So, exactly. So now I can start layering things that way I want to. And I can call these tracks, once I've inserted them in, I can call them in and out auto-mute very quickly. So I can, you know, once I brought the hi-hat in, I can double-tap the hi-hat button, and it cuts out right away. And I can double-tap, and I can bring it right back in. Or I can tap and reach down and grab a different hi-hat and pull it in so that I can start changing the music as I'm building it. I can build all 4 tracks. I can use 2 tracks. I can pull tracks in and out.
Is it recording this stuff so you can play it back once you're done? Or does it just go on? Is there an end point to the song? Or do you...
There's going to be performance. And they're working on... I talked to them about that at E3. I'm trying to remember where we left that. I was more interested in just playing it. I think there is going to be a way to record it. I don't really remember.
Right. I mean, because, you know, if you could share it with your friends, that'd be kind of neat.
I think the last time... So I remember
that
talking,
sounds like... Sorry to interrupt. That sounds like a game that begs for, like, YouTube sharing.
Yeah. So I think that was one of the things that they're working on. I forgot to... I was more caught up in, like,
what
the
I need you to do now is get back on a plane and go to Tokyo and ask them these questions.
It'd be my pleasure. I'd be very happy to go back. So that's the basic building blocks.
Right.
Okay, so... just with that alone, you'd be able to mix up these tracks, obviously, with four variations of four different instruments. There's, what's that, 4 factorial for number of options? Is that math wizards? Tell me how many options that is. That's a lot of options.
That sounds,
it's more than four.
Sounds,
it's more than 4 factorial. Anyway, it's some.
I'm a writer because I'm not good at math. I just count my money.
So anyway.
That stacks.
There's a tremendous. So have you ever heard of a thing called a hazard pad?
Okay. You were talking to Dave about this in the office.
So, Dave, I'm going to ask Dave real quickly, or I could pull it up. Dave, how would you describe in a sentence, when there'll be a little blank while he tells me, what a hazard pad is? Dave. Well, okay, so he described it as a drum machine that you can manipulate. The thing about a hazard pad is that it's a visual device that you touch and interact with that changes a number of parameters of the way the music's being filtered through electronic devices. So you can add, like, for instance, a flanger, or you can add an echo or a delay to things.
Is that device those guys from Yo-Ya use in their videos?
It's a handheld remix station. I don't know if that's exactly what they use,
okay.
But it's a crazy device. If you check it out on YouTube, there's a number of DJs that have done, like, some crazy performance art with these things. They're really freaking cool.
Right.
Basically, what you have with the Move controller is a virtual hazard pad in your hand. So once I've pulled, follow along with me again. I pull my bass track in. So I press the triangle button. I pick a bass track. I pull it in. I let go. Now I've got the bass track, but it's still my active track. I press that Move button in the center of the Move controller, and I have a 3D space in front of me that controls a number of parameters that they've set up as the cool parameters to fuck with on this piece of music. So I can push in to the screen. I can pull out from the screen. I can move over and up to the left. And you can start playing around with this thing in 3D space until you find the way you want the sound to sound in your, in, you know, as you're listening to it. So maybe you're, like, listening to a bass track. And it's like, and you can, like get the echo like all kinds of crazy stuff like that. Or you could take, you know, for instance, like a bass line, and one of the bass lines I heard, or one of the kick drum lines I heard, had like a really heavy low pass filter on it. So then you can also, once you've found where you want, you can then twist the Move controller to a dial in and dial out that parameter to get it tweaked to just where you want it.
I mean, it sounds really cool. And I probably, it would be one of those things that I play for a couple of hours. And I'm like, this is awesome. But, like, what are the goals? Like, how is this tied into the PlayStation Network in terms of?
Do you like music?
I mean, sure. But I mean, what are you trying to do in the game? I mean,
it's
because
not a game.
One of the, see that, and that's what I want.
You're
to
playing
kind of,
music.
That's what I kind of want to go to is one of the first things I asked you when you were telling me about this in the office was, would you call it a game? And you wouldn't call it a game.
No, it's definitely not a game. Okay. There's no game, you know, and I'm using those air quotes. There's no game to it, but it's intensely fun to do.
There's no scoring mechanic. There's no, like, you know, it's not keeping
a record of how well you're doing
or anything.
No, no,
yeah,
no,
yeah.
No,
it's
no,
just
no.
about having fun with it.
No, yeah, it's just, well, and especially if you're into music, like, so here's the thing that I see is I think there'll be casual folks like Zav who'll enjoy it and then play with it a little bit. But I think the problem is that you'll very quickly hit what I realized after playing it for about an hour is the wall. And I only tinkered with it a little bit after this, because what you're really going to want to do if you're into music is for each of the various tracks that you can play, memorize the four sounds that you have for each of the four instruments, because that's the only way you're going to be able to start crafting the music phrases that you want. Because keep in mind, now you've got to know, oh, you know what I need right now? I want that silky smooth bass with the double beat. Or I want that on the ones beat right now. Or, you know, you know what I want? I want that syncopated hi-hat. I need to bring that in right here. And you have to have memorized, oh, that's hi-hat top right, and then be able to pull that in. And then on top of that, if you really know the sound you want, oh yeah, that's right, I want to bring in hi-hat top right, and then I want to, like, put in the you know, the flanger and roll it up here to the right and twist it in a little bit. You know,
see, I'd love to see him throw something in too, where you could record an audio clip either taken from other media or one you record yourself, and then mix that into the thing so you can tweak it and so it doesn't really
That's not really technically feasible because the way it's handling all of this is it has to have all of the beats and meters lined up, matched up 1:1:1:1. Because keep in mind, it's like the amazing part of this, if you think about it, is the raw amount of processing that the PS3 is running to do this thing is freaking it's kind of absurd. It's the kind of stuff you think of actually when you think of people doing like crazy visual stuff. Mm-hmm. What they're doing with music by combining four full tracks, pulling from a number of different phrase from a big phrase library, all of which can be incredibly tweaked and tuned with different effects.
Right.
And doing it on the fly in real time is kind of amazing. And then on top of all that, with each of the four instruments within the four phrases, they all have unique one shots or kind of fills. So you can also like then take the move controller and vertical chop it or horizontal slice it and get like a one shot like a sound riff, you know like a
it sounds really cool
sound sample kind of bounce in there.
It sounds really cool. I just wonder if, like you said, the people that are really into music are going to hit that wall and go, ooh, I really can't do exactly what I want.
No, the people who are really into music will hit the wall, but they'll go past it. It's the people who aren't that are going to think it's cool, but not. They're going to see people messing with it and go, that's really cool. How'd you do that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And then go, oh, well, that's kind of a bummer.
That takes some work.
Yeah. Like, Dave's going to say, well, but see, the thing is, so Dave said, it sounds like I'm going to play and want to go just make music. The thing, Dave, is that you are literally making, you know, if you ascribe to the idea that DJs who remix and remaster music are making music, you are making music. Mm-hmm. I mean, this basically throws the whole thing open to you. I'll leave you on this thought. The producer on the game, Rowan, did this amazing thing. He actually showed it off while I was there. And I guess like hardly anybody in the studio had seen it. You can, because when you pull a track in, you're pulling it in and it's dropping that track in on the phrase beats. Mm-hmm. You can actually sort of trick the game into opening a whole new set of phrases that you mess with by bringing a beat in and then bringing that beat back in on top of itself at the mid measure. So if the measure of the bass line is do 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 do. Do, do, do. You can do 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 and bring it in again and just get do 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 do
right.
Do, do. And you have to just keep bringing it in and bringing it in and bringing it in. And once you're doing that, it's like now you're literally painting the music into like this 3D space while it's all jamming. Man, it's freaking unbelievable.
That sounds sort of like a, you know, a dance mechanic almost layered on top, like similar to that where you're like, you know, doing these things and it's actually
this
physical
so
expressions.
Cool.
That's pretty neat.
I think it sounds really cool. The one thing that I love about you telling this story or talking about it is that this sense memory of you having played it and you keep moving your arm to you would have pulled it out. Like, I wish we were video recording this podcast so people could see that. But it sounds really cool. I mean, I probably be one of those people who hit the wall, but it's something that I think I really want to check out. I really love the games that Q releases. I'm willing to give anything a shot if their name's behind it.
So I think they're going to be at it for a while because there's a tremendous amount of music to put into it. You know,
there's release date.
It's going to be like this for them is obviously something they're very, very, very passionate about. And you can tell like when we're playing it, like I got to play for like an hour and a half, but I bet we all combined. I bet we probably played that damn thing for like 3.5-4 hours, and it's so bizarre because everybody who plays it does something different with
That's what I think is awesome.
Yeah,
about
that's
it.
Really
and it's
neat.
With
yeah.
the same track.
That's very cool.
Like Bion gets on and like shows, oh, he's like, oh, Garnet, I want to show you this new track. So he shows me this new track and he plays the way he plays it. And then Dylan plays with it and it becomes like this like crazy electro trance version, but he's using the same samples. He's just dialing them in different and it sounds completely different. And Rowan plays it and it's like this completely like floor banging electro house, like, you know, super like everyone out on the dance floor sort of thing. And then I play it and I'm like sort of playing with like some drum and bass and sort of liquiding it up. And I'm like, all of this came from one long track with a bunch of, you know, options and then way we play with it.
It sounds like they have to have some sort of sharing mechanic in this. Because...
Oh, they're going to. They're going to have. So the idea is, I think, if I remember correctly, is to have some performance, like, you know, like where you can like you could throw Jeff and you could say, hey, I'm going to play, and then people could come and listen to you playing and you know, online.
The one thing I want you to do when this game does come out, if there's a sharing thing, I want you to record a song, and that'll be one of the songs we throw to in this show.
Oh, we could do that.
I want you to create a song.
That'd be awesome.
I mean, like everyone on the show could do that and see how it works out.
Oh, dude, we should totally do that.
Like remix. Everyone does a remix. Everyone on NeoGAF is freaking out right now.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's Life
Loves
Like.
Loves the music on this show.
And as you can tell from the 20 minutes it took just to like work through the explanation here, that's why when they just showed it at E3 and you're like watching it, it's like you're watching and it looks cool, but you just it's hard to grasp what's going on. And so the visualizer thing, short and simple. It's beautiful. It's all procedurally generated off of the music and the tweaks that you made to the music. So it's completely dynamically creating that visualizer.
I'm very intrigued. Yeah.
It's very cool. So it's very funny because there's such a contrast between that and then side-scroller, which is, it's funny to me that side-scroller is the outgrowth of Shooter and Shooter 2, because it almost feels like it would have been the first game, right?
Right.
So follow me, because it's even more traditional, you know, Shooter 2 is a twin stick shooter, which is fairly straightforward. But then you've got like the rescuing the scientists mechanic to it. You've got all the different physics stuff, which there's physics stuff in side scroller. But when it comes down to it, side scroller has this almost bit trip like homage to classic gaming.
Right.
You know, it has a very, very, very firm foundation in basic side-scroller shooting mechanics with other things added to it.
So what you're saying is, like, in terms of the historical sense of video game culture, this would be the game that would come out first because it is like those old games that we used to play.
Yeah, and I just almost think from a creative standpoint, it's interesting that the creative growth was, well, let's do this really, it kind of speaks to the way Q approaches stuff of, well, let's do this really creative thing. And then while they're working on it, oh, you know what? Like, let's do this really creative twist on this really core fundamental kind of game that's been around for a long while that we sort of started riffing on in the first place.
Well, and you see in the indie space, you see a lot of that, like people taking one old school mechanic and then innovating around that. So you have this immediate, like, this is familiar to me, but this is totally new and awesome.
Yeah.
And I don't feel alienated because there are these familiar aspects. That's really cool.
So it plays, there's not a whole lot. The thing about it is there's not that much to say about side-scroller because it's very pure. The controls right now play fantastically. I found that I really liked playing it with the D-pad as opposed to the analog stick, which to me just speaks volumes, volumes of how authentic it is to that old school vibe. There's something about the stick that while it feels like it moves fast, just when you're playing with a D-pad, you feel so tightly in control.
There's way more precision, especially with a game like that.
And man, there are bullet hell sections of that game that are just, I like the flow and rhythm of it right now. It has a very, it's very two modes to it. There's parts where you're traversing areas, and then there's parts where you get to an area, and now you're going to have a big fucking showdown.
Like a little mini arena.
And there's going to be bosses, and there's going to be all kinds of turrets. There's going to be bullets all over the screen, and you know you're going to get that like super adrenaline-fueled dodging and shooting vibe to it. And I like the way they did the weapons with the power-ups. So the way they do the power-ups is that every so often you'll face a wave of enemies that are, you know, like a group of five, and then one of them will be green, and you have to destroy the green enemy, and then he'll pop a power-up. And you get to choose which weapon you apply it to by switching to that weapon and then taking the power-up. So you can do missiles or lasers or machine guns. It's very, really polished, really well put together. And if you haven't looked at the art style already, you should definitely check out some of the videos because it has that sort of, glowing 8-bit but reinterpreted look. They even like did the fishbowl effect on the screen.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So if you haven't seen it, it's like they did a fishbowl effect on the screen, and they also did some of that CRT digital noise on there. So it just, dude, it's crazy.
Neat.
It's totally crazy.
So when is this? Do we know when this is expected?
This fall, I think.
Okay.
I mean, they're obviously in heavy polish phase, but if you've played their games before, you know they're pretty hardcore about making sure their stuff is spot on when it hits.
Q is one of those companies, and there are a few other companies that do this, that their ideas are very simplistic but their execution is very intricate, and they don't over design their games, you know what I mean? When you look at the art in Shooter, it seems very flat, like matte colors, and it's not, I don't mean flat in a bad way, but it's just, it makes a lot of sense based on the design that they've selected. They're not over designing things. Like, you look at something like horrible comparison, but like Gears of War, where you look at the character models and everyone is over designed, like way too much shit. I think they're very simplistic in their approach in terms of the core concept and their art, but they have a really great way of making intricate gameplay that they do and other companies do really well. So,
By the way, if you haven't played Shooter 2, you know, they just released a free demo. With online multiplayer. So if you haven't played Shooter 2, it's at least worth going and trying out the free demo.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a little break. I think what we'll do is we'll pick up Monsters Social real quick when we come back on the other side, because there's not a terrible amount to talk about that yet. It was just announced at Casual Connect, but I can give you sort of an overview of that. We'll get into some Bastion. We still have your comments and news still to come on Weekend Confirmed. Stick around. We'll be right back. Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. All right, we are back. Still to come later on, we're going to talk a little bit about the Shadows of the Damned and Child of Eden sales. Disappointments. I have to say I was sorely disappointed because they are both outstanding games, and I was really hopeful that they would do better than that. If you haven't bought them, go buy them. And yes. No waiting for them to be $20 is not a great excuse. I mean, that simply is, well, I don't know. I mean, it's financially responsible. I get that. I can't really argue that point.
You're very good with your money. We agree that you're good with your
money.
Can't
argue that point.
But stop being good with your money.
Maybe on this one if you can. Or, yeah, I don't know. Do something.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're a gamer, you buy games, you just make those decisions. That's a decision worth making.
Yeah, it is definitely a decision worth making. All right, so let's wrap up the Pixel Junk stuff real quick. Monsters Social was announced at Casual Connect. Dylan Cuthbert showed it off. First few screenshots. I think that the 10,000-foot view of this thing is it is definitely Monsters. So they have not – they've been able to translate the core tower defense game mechanic into a window in the browser. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that jumped out to me from what they showed me of the prototype stuff is that they have gone – the correct decision of how to handle that space versus what I think it was one of the biggest stumbles that Civilization made, which is Civ has a way overly complex and detailed UI for that little window. There's buttons, there's all kinds of stuff you're supposed to click on, and it's a full screen high res PC UI in a window in a medium res browser box.
Yeah,
doesn't work.
It sounds like the opposite of what a lot of other developers in the social space are doing, where they're throwing a social hook and let's build a game around it, and then you end up with this, you know.
It's a casual game that I think is aimed towards people who are hardcore gamers that have casual time on their hands,
Which game is?
Civ World.
Oh, okay.
I mean, specifically. It's a casual game that's aimed at hardcore gamers that know that franchise and know that world, that have casual time on their hands, rather than a casual gamer that is going to look at that and be it's a little daunting.
Yes. I agree with you about that.
Strange.
So Pixel Junk Monsters for social networks, again, like we talked about earlier, that doesn't sound like they've landed on a platform. I mean, I think everyone's going to presume Facebook, but I mean, I asked Dylan like 3 or 4 times and he's like, well, you know, we're still working on it. There's a lot of places we could put it. So we're going to look what we can do. Okay, cool.
Twitter.
We're waiting to hear what Google Plus does with their API.
Twitter game.
I would love to see that game on Twitter.
So if you look at it, I think one of the things that will jump out to you right away is that, like I said, they went the opposite direction. Everything is blown up. They did an entirely new art package for this game. I got to talk to the art designer. She's super cool, and I love what she's done with reinterpreting Tiki Man and the art for this game. It looks very much like pastries almost. It's like, you know, it's like a very soft, rounded. The detail level, I think something that maybe they get good at this from the games that they've created is that they've matched the fidelity and the style of the art to the resolution and the area that they're playing within. And it works really well. So everything's bigger. One thing that's a little different is, at least in the prototype they have right now, is there's some tower location management. So you'll be able to move trees around within some set spaces and decide where along those paths that you want to put your trees. The paths are shorter. The number of waves are shorter, and that's because
that makes sense. Yeah,
because most people are going to play a social game in 5 to 10 minute chunks, right? So they're trying to adapt to that. When you go to click into a map, it'll show you what the waves are going to be, so you can start getting prepped for it. Mm-hmm. And then they have this overlayer of it, and the game's going to take place on a series of islands. And the way the islands are laid out is they're all patchwork of grids, and each one of the grid spaces is a tower defense mini game. Mm-hmm. Not a mini game, but I mean that's the meat of the game. And so you click into
it's a level, basically.
It's a level. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's a level. And so you go into the levels and you win them, and once you've won enough of them, then you gain rainbows, and the rainbows show up on the island, and you open new islands and are able to move from island to island.
Double rainbow all the fucking way.
I can hear Andrew Yoon salivating because I know Monsters ruined his life when that came out.
Well, and I would guess...
What was it, Monsters Deluxe that came out afterwards on PSP?
Yes.
Yeah, again.
So I'm going to venture a guess that he was really into the comparative scorekeeping thing, because that's the thing that people who are into Monsters got into, was, you know, comparing their... And that's the social hook here. The big social hook is how well can you do... You can compare it against all your friends. It's very easy to see all that stuff because you're already in a social network. And then they're working on some co-op ideas, but they were being very... Very mum about co-op ideas. So I don't know.
Co-op tower defense sounds kind of interesting in and of itself.
Yeah, I was thinking about how you work this into the game. You know, one of the things that they pointed out was, you know, there's the balancing issue that you always had with Tiki Man when you were playing the game of, do you go and grab the coins as you kill the monsters, or do you try and upgrade towers?
Right.
And they've kept that in with this by having the mouse control work similarly to where, if you want to upgrade a tower, you have to have Tiki Man there clicking on him. And if you want to collect the coins, you have to go swipe the mouse around and collect those coins. You can't be getting the best of both worlds here. You can't leave Tiki Man just sitting there powering up a turret while you go do something
else. Bind him to a hotkey.
Right. Yeah.
So it looks really cool. I mean, obviously, it's real game. It's very much real game. No word – excuse me. No word on where the paywall is going to be. Dylan said that, look, we want people to be able to play it for free, so I expect that they'll give away a substantial amount of game. I mean, they want people to play it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, right. I think track record has shown in the space that if you get people playing your game, then you start making money off your game.
Well, especially if, you know, those games are like little bits of crack anyway. You're just, you know, one more level.
Yeah. So I'm thrilled. Yeah. I'm thrilled to see this kind of game finally coming to a social network and challenging the social pyramid schemes of Zynga.
Well, I mean, let's wait to see how it turns out in terms of how all of that structure is gonna fare. Because I remember you were equally excited for the Empires thing.
Well, I didn't ever get to play that.
No, the Empires thing that you...
Yeah, Empires and Allies.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't get to play... I didn't even get to see that ahead of time. I mean,
right.
There was the promise of, okay. Well, we did Red Alert. Of course we're making a strategy game. And then we got to it, and it wasn't like that. I mean, I watched these guys playing their prototype, and while, yes, it was... Early on, it looked really cool.
What platform were they? Were they just playing it in a browser at that point? They didn't, wasn't playing within the API of another platform like a Facebook or a Twitter.
On Twitter, yeah.
I think they were just playing it in their dev environment.
Really? Okay.
It didn't. You know what? I was more focused on like what I was looking at than, you know, that stuff, because I had asked and it didn't matter. I think they were just playing. Yeah, I think they're just running. I mean, it must be.
Well, if they haven't even announced platforms yet, I'm sure that's, you know,
all that stuff runs in Java, right? Or Flash? All runs in Flash. Is that right?
No, it depends. There's different developers.
C++?
No. I have no idea. So,
they're programming like XNA?
They were running it in their dev environment, because that's what they're working on it on. You know? Yeah. It was on a laptop, but I mean, just running in a dev environment.
Hey, we're all playing Bastion.
Yes.
And Mr.
Good, I can stop talking.
Jeff Mattis. Mr. Jeff Mattis. You, sir, did the review on shacknews.com for Bastion.
I did. So, I guess, I want to hear what you guys think, because I finished it. I'm on my way through the new game plus mode, but I'd like to hear your guys.
Well, I would hope that you finished it if you reviewed it. Honestly overhyped. No, I'm kidding. It is awesome.
Yeah.
I fucking love this game. I wanted to come in here and really joke about the fact that I thought it was terrible, just to see how many threads were created by accident as I was speaking.
The kid thought he'd be clever.
Yeah, exactly.
Picked up the mic, but his joke just didn't fly.
Did not, much like many. So I only played the first two worlds, I think, or like the first two. I mean, it branches off. You could select what you want to do. Right. But I've only built two little storefronts in that section. I guess that's the Bastion.
The Bastion,
The Bastion itself. And I was worried when we first talked about this game that narration would really get, you know, really get on my nerves.
Like they would overuse it, or
like it would be overused. Yeah. And it never gets to that point because it smartly does something like when you first start the game and you are getting up, it does the whole like he gets up and he does all this other stuff.
Right.
And it introduces to you things like he finds his shield and he finds this guy. And then but whenever you do some of those things again, like getting up again, it doesn't repeat that stuff. It doesn't send like fall back on like, oh, we have a speech for this. Like he's getting up again. Play the speech. You know, it doesn't do that.
And did you ever run into any instances where you were doing something that he commented on that obviously you could have missed had you not went to mess around?
Yeah, it does this a lot because the world, one thing I love about the game is that the world's building around you.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And it there are sections of it where it's like a hidden area and you don't know it's a hidden area unless you start walking in that direction and then the world starts to build. And then like the narrator will sort of call out the fact that you've done this.
Right.
And the only thing that I ever, I'm sort of OCD a little bit when it comes to like when a game branches and one path is a side quest path and one path is main quest stuff, I always need to check both because I don't want there to be like, you know, it's like the Game Shark codes are on the other side of this fucking thing. Like, and I got to go finish there. The Game Genie shit is over here. You know, like I want to go make sure that I find everything. So whenever I start going down this path in Bastion, they go on a little long, and I'm like, is this the side quest path or the main quest path? And then I like backtrack, and I have to go back and check.
Right. Well, and
I think I need to go to see a doctor. Is what I'm saying.
Well, like,
I'm losing my mind.
That sort of mentality is extended into other like there are certain levels where you'll and you know this isn't really a spoiler per se, but you'll start in the center of a hub, and that's the beginning of the level, and you'll have to choose which of four paths to go down, and you'll eventually go down all four of them. But depending on which way you go first, the narration changes a bit. Like, you know, it'll actually comment, you know, which way you're going and whether you go to the end path of that, you know, level first and then go back to the other stuff. It'll, you know, sort of, it dynamically changes.
Kid went down to the swamps. Knew there'd be some gas bags waiting. He'd be ready.
That's right. With a big hammer.
The thing, I mean, at first, because I was talking to Jeff about it, I think, or I can't remember who I was talking to about it. And they were saying like, it's the combat system is glorious and they really enjoyed it and they thought it was fantastic. And then in the beginning, I was just like, really? Like, this is what people... And I was like, really? This is what people are saying is glorious? And then you start to earn abilities and you get more control over what you can do. And I was like, okay, now it starts to open up where you have a lot of weapons at your disposal, I guess, is the way the leadership.
A lot of tools, and then they keep throwing more enemy types at you.
Yes.
Which, you know, and they all have different attack patterns and behaviors and stuff. So, you know, your arsenal, of which you can have two weapons at any given time, switch them in and out in between missions, your tactics will change dramatically depending on what you have equipped.
Yeah. And the thing we were talking about on the show last week was Dead Space, for example, Dead Space 2 I'm playing. The game doesn't give you a good indication of when you upgrade a weapon, what that weapon will be able to do, or, you know, who it will be effective against. And this game does a really good job of giving you, like, this is exactly what you should expect from the upgrading this specific weapon. It doesn't sugarcoat anything. It tells you very plainly, and it makes you more confident in your decisions, I think.
I agree.
You know,
they differentiated their weapons exceedingly well.
Yes.
I think that's part of why you're able to discern the differences, is because when you have one, you know exactly what it's good at, and it looks like what it is, it plays like what it is, and it feels like what it is. So, and what I mean by that is, you got a big ass hammer. You think, oh, big ass hammer, heavy, hit hard, slow. It's exactly like that. Oh, I've got dueling pistols. Oh, fast, gonna fire a lot. Might be a little off accuracy, but then, you know, I'm gonna throw a ton of ammo out, but I'm gonna have to reload a lot. It's like everything just clicks the way it ought to.
Well, and there wasn't a single weapon that I didn't have a great time using in its own way. I had my favorites for sure. But like I wasn't like, okay, because a lot of these RPGs, I'll go, okay, I got the sword and the hammer and the shield or whatever, and I'll, you know,
you'll fixate, you'll like lock
yeah,
in,
I'll be like
this
20%
is my combo,
and I'm like, this is my loadout, you know, this is what I'm going out every time, and this was very very much not that way.
Yeah, not to, it's a bad comparison to compare it to Dead Space 2, but those are the two games I kind of been playing the last little while, and you know, think about something like Dead Space. Specifically for the weapons, every single weapon does something different. So I'm like, there's an inherent strategy of like, okay, this is the gun that will explode and everything around it will burst into flames. Whereas like if I play Bastion and I have the bow, which is the thing that I really enjoy, you compensate and you strategize and you create tactics around the fact that there is this delay in the fact that when you pull back the bow and charge it, and you could still walk around versus when you have the gun thing. I can't remember exactly what it's called.
The repeater.
The repeater. You can't move when you're using it, and it's very quick to fire, and it reloads very slowly.
Right.
And there's all these like little tactics between that stuff that really does make a difference, and it's not just a area of effect or the way that the weapon fires that is very different. It's sort of everything that is about that weapon makes that strategy something that you have to think about.
Mm-hmm. Right. That makes absolute sense. Yeah.
But like it, whereas like if I'm playing, you know, Dead Space, it's like, here's the line gun. It's basically the same as this other thing. And like, you know, it's also going to destroy these. And I love Dead Space 2. I know you hate it, Garnet, and you're crazy.
No, I don't hate it. I have not played Dead Space 2.
I thought you played Dead Space, or you went back to Dead Space 1.
I started playing Dead Space 1, and I just, it didn't click for me.
It didn't click for you. Well, that's fine. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, for me, I really like that game, but there were problems that we talked about during the last episode that I'm not seeing in this game, and it's not a great comparison, but I think fantastic title.
The Dead Space 2, I mean, not to keep harping on Dead Space 2, but that whole puzzle element of, you know, Dead Space 2 is more immediate because you can carry a whole bunch of weapons at once, and, yeah. You know, this is, Bastion is two weapons, but yeah. It's very similar in that you're facing a certain type of enemy, or you know you're going to run into a bunch of, you're switching your weapon, you know, you can take any enemy out with any weapon, but there are much more efficient ways to do it. So, like, very specific weapons are generally more effective against other guys.
Right.
Sometimes your countering is very valuable.
Yeah.
Some guys, you really have to be good with that counter shield attack.
Yes. Yeah. How far did you get into it, Garnet? Are you pretty deep into it?
I'm pretty deep in it. I'm well into collecting the second set of things you have
really?
To collect.
Because I'm still pretty early. I think, I've only...
That was my. I'm glad I did that the sneaky way then, so I didn't spoil.
Yeah, right. No, yeah. Thank you for not spoiling it for me. My only concern playing the game very early, and this isn't a criticism yet because I don't know if it's going to continue this way, is that it feels like battle arenas.
It'll vary level. I mean, there is a little bit of similarity in the level design. I think that's just part and parcel to being an action RPG like
yeah.
that. But no, it's you're not gonna feel like you're in the same. I mean, just on the art alone,
yeah.
It switches up quite dramatically. But the level design itself, how the maps are laid out, they vary quite a bit. They keep throwing surprises. I'm not gonna ruin them, but they keep throwing surprises at you, even all the way up to the very last stage of the game.
Yeah,
there's stuff that you do that you've never done in the rest of the game. So,
which I mean, and this is a criticism of I think all games recently or. A lot of shooters especially, where everything kind of feels like kill rooms. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm walking into, oh, this is the part where I have to kill seven guys, and then, you know, the guitar riff will hit, and then, there's a criticism of Gears of War, I guess. But, and then you go to the next room, and it's like, oh, shit, more guys and guitar riff, and like you keep going. And I like Gears of War, and it does a good job of pacing itself, but, I mean, I was just wondering whether or not the game is going to keep
There's a few instances of that. However, there's still plenty of adventure. I think one of the things that they have done very well here is... controlled the level sizes to vary. There's so many things about this game that just in general to me that stand out as done so elegantly in the mechanics of it that they almost go overlooked because it's just working so damn well.
Right.
And one of them would be playing the game, because playing the levels, you get into a level, you play it, and just about the time you're feeling like, man, I've had a great time with this level, you get to the end of it, you pop out, and you're very soon on to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, another one is how well this weapon system we talked about works. Another one is how well the simple tonic system. So there's these tonics in the game that give you boosts, and it's very much the sort of thing you would have seen in skill trees in other games.
Yeah, it's
however,
like perks or whatever.
It's instantly reconfigurable every time you go back to the pub building or whatever that's called.
The distillery.
Yeah, distillery, yeah. So you can change your loadout. So it's another thing that lets you tweak. There's so many things that it does that makes the game just fun to play, and yet that's only one layer of why I like it so much. There's the art style. There's the you know, oh, just
so the, beautiful.
It's really yeah. pretty game.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
No, it's presentationally, it's amazing.
Isn't the team like, I know Greg Cassavant is the co-founder. Cassavant. I think. Cassavant is the co-founder of
Supergiant,
and it wasn't the game made by like five or six people. Isn't
yeah, in a garage yep. in San Jose.
Oh, the living the dream.
And the music is fantastic.
Oh,
the
yeah.
music is music delightful.
It's brilliant. And again, that's one of those things where they keep throwing these new little things at you, like even all the way up to the end, where you're
Shut
like,
it.
Wow, this song is awesome.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about game mechanics for a
second. Oh, no.
Don't ruin it for me.
And for me, the thing that most stood out about the narration part is that the meter with which it's put into the game is it works every place. So, for instance, at the beginning of the game, there's much more narration than there is as you get further and further into the game. And at the beginning of each level, there's more narration than there is later and later in the game. And so basically what the narration is doing is it's pulling you through the slower part of the game and then giving way to the action as the action tempo ramps up through both through the game itself and through each level. It's freaking brilliant the way it is laid in there.
And, without spoiling anything, there's some stuff where the narrative actually takes control of the story a little bit, which is really, anyway,
sounds cool. Awesome. I want to move on to another downloadable game that I've
talk
a little bit about.
So jealous that you got this.
Next week's Summer of Arcade game, From Dust, coming from Ubisoft, and I can't remember, I think it's Mount Peltier or something.
I shall look it up for you.
Who
Leonard Peltier.
Yeah,
Leonard Peltier, what?
So, From Dust, we've talked about it on the show before, and it is a game that we've compared to things like Lemmings, Populous, another popular comparison to
very
the game.
Very strong.
So I started playing the game, and I was like, what have I got myself into? It is, at first I was very strange. The whole purpose of the game is that you have these tribes that you're trying to bring from one part of the world and bring them to a sanctuary. And through that sanctuary, they go to a new part of this world where they collect idols and they create civilizations and they return vegetation to this world that's sort of been covered in water. So you are playing as this I can't remember exactly what the character is called, or you play as sort of this blob that turns into this wisp that you can pick up matter, you can pick up dust.
So you're essentially a manifestation of the prayers of the tribe.
Right. I remember you having this conversation. I thought you were high at the time. So
I'm not saying I wasn't, but you are essentially a manifestation.
Doesn't make it any less true.
PDS. No. So anyway, that was a terrible Star Wars. Anyone? Star Trek 4 joke there? Never mind.
Anyway. LDS.
Oh, LDS. Why did I say PDS? Now I'm thinking of something else. So anyway, From Dust is essentially you are this whisper thing, and you're grabbing landmass and you're creating bridges and formations in order to connect these worlds together and connect section to section so that the vegetation and the civilization can grow throughout the world. And you are creating bridges and passes and collecting their hidden idols and things. And at first I was like, okay, this is cool, the first section. The second level, which is as far as I can talk about it, is where you are told in the beginning of the level there is a tsunami coming. And you have 3 minutes to build the civilization, to build a path to this horn that can repel the tsunami. So I'm frantically building this path so this one guy can run and grab this horn and run back. And like he runs back and there's like 2 seconds left and he gets to the entrance and then the tsunami comes and wipes everyone out and completely destroys the civilization. And I tried it again and I eventually got it and I thought, okay, well, I've got this horn that will repel the tsunami, which you actually see this cutscene of this wave. It's not even cutscene; it's in game. This wave comes and washes away the earth and destroys everything in its path. But when I played it again and actually completed it, I thought, okay, well, I guess I'm not going to see the tsunami. The great thing about it is that you actually see this happening. You see the tsunami still comes, and then you see them blowing this horn. And you were saying Garnet that essentially what's happening is they're solidifying the actual water.
So a big play of the game is that your god powers are involving manipulation of the states of matter. So it's very much into manipulating air and water and fire and earth. And so keeping within that modality, then of course you're able to, by using the horn, sort of, you know, gelatinite the water as it's coming at you. I mean, you go out and look at the wave that's coming across the ocean at you. It's frozen in space and looks like a big jello mold.
So are all these elements supposed to have like solid, liquid, and gas forms?
I don't know if they're all going to have that, but there's certainly an element of that, because what you're doing, like when Zav's talking about moving around and creating paths, what he's literally doing is raising and lowering earth and moving water. And
it's not even raising and lowering. It's like you actually literally you're going to a place that has earth and you grab earth and collect as much of it as you can and drop it into the world and try to create paths that like build bridges over streams of water or over chasms or, you know, on top of mountains so that these little lemmings characters can walk this path, this predetermined path to get to their objective, which you can set their objective.
And it's all dynamically happening in real time, which was really cool. Is the whole world is being modeled in full physics as you're playing with it. So if there's water running and you drop some dirt in the middle of this running stream, if there's enough water to dam it up, it'll dam and run around. If there's not, it'll start running over the top and start eroding it.
I did actually see some early footage of somebody grabbing, like in the game, grabbing magma out of a volcano and creating a higher wall because they'd put it somewhere and it would cool off and turn into a solid.
So we're talking about From Dust, which is the downloadable game coming from Ubisoft Montpellier. It's being developed by Eric Chahi, C-H-A-H-I. And it's going to come out on Steam Online, Gamers Gate, and Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't played it to completion, and we can't really talk further about it. But I didn't want to tease and say that I've been playing something that I couldn't actually talk about. But you know, so far the game, it looks great. The music again is another great. I mean, there's so much great music in these indie titles, or I guess this is not really an indie title, but these downloadable title experiences.
It's indie spirited. How about that?
It's certainly indie spirited. It reminds me of, you know, some of the art house games that you've seen on Xbox Live Arcade in the past, like. Limbo is not a fair comparison, but I mean, it's sort of in that vein in terms of the art style. Seems very simplistic. One thing that to what you were saying before, Garnet, is that that's what ended up screwing me up in that level is I made a bridge over the stream of water thinking, okay, he has the horn, he's coming back. When I scrolled back down, the water had overrun the bridge that I created.
And washed it out.
And washed
it
out.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's like, it's all happening. And you can pull out to a huge, like, you know, world view and then zoom all the way down to the characters. And it looks great.
In later levels, there's like volcanic activity. And so you can wait for a volcano to erupt and then adapt the world by digging a path for the water to get there or something and divert water to hit where the lava is and it'll cool it off and turn it into hard rock versus dust. So you can like create hard land masses versus soft land masses. And yeah, there's all kinds of cool, crazy stuff going on there.
Instabot.
Cool.
I don't know if we have a lot of time. I also saw Orcs Must Die last week. I forgot to put on this list, but, so Robot Entertainment came to the office and showed off Orcs Must Die, which is the game that's coming out later this summer. They've announced for Steam and Xbox Live Arcade. Microsoft is actually publishing the game on both platforms. And so I'm not great at tower defense. You were mentioning Monsters earlier, and I've played Monsters, but I never really enjoyed it.
You haven't rainbowed it?
I'm not great at tower defense games, and this game is sort of a mix of tower defense and third-person shooter.
Okay.
So you create the entire thing is there are these castles or fortresses that are being overrun, and there is this thing called the Rift that you need to protect. And these orcs and other monsters are trying to invade in order to get to the Rift and destroy it, and which will end your game. So you have to put these traps in their path. So there's like spike traps, and there's like traps that you put on the wall that shoots arrows, and then they're like these traps. So the interesting thing about it is, originally, when they were designing the game, Robot was they were mentioning to me that it was intended to be a very serious game. The art was very serious, and this was going to be a very hardcore
game. I like how
you
gave me an admonishing look, like it's very serious,
very serious. And then they started adding traps, like a thing that you stand on that flings people out of the way, like this little bounce pad.
And suddenly it got silly.
And they're like, we should probably change it so it really, you know, focuses on that. And it's really entertaining, where you have these giant orc hordes coming running toward your running toward the Rift to try to get to you, and you fling them away into like this vat of lava to destroy them. Or you can do things like put these pads down that are sort of tar pits that slow them down, and then you can build on the fly as well, which is really cool. You keep gaining money as you're destroying these enemies, so you can keep putting new traps down and try to protect these rifts. And the thing that, as you progress through the game, you have multiple paths that they're coming out of too, which is, you know, something that you've seen in other games as well. But then there's a lot of dynamic stuff about it too that I think is really fun. You know, there are a lot of different enemies that you have to control their path through the air. They're flying through the air. You also have magic that you can utilize, fire and ice. It's like you have a crossbow, and you can get different weapons, and you can go in and start hitting people with swords and stuff. It was a lot of fun.
How does the transition between the third person running around and the trap laying and all that stuff
it's work? it's all within the world. So it's like trap laying is essentially like a spell that you're casting. So a spell to get tar pits, and then you select where you want it to go, and then you can, like, you know, actually create a tar pit. So the one thing that I actually want to mention too is the Justin at Robot was telling me that someone who was playing the game, I think at PAX, didn't realize how those jump pads work because you can rotate them, and ended up setting them up so it flinged people, which he thought was out of the way of the rift, but ended up flinging people right into the rift and ended up like destroying the rift in like 30 seconds because he flinged them right into it. It looks so much fun, and it's coming soon. I think it's coming at the end of August or September, beginning of September.
That sounds cool. It's another one that's on my list of, wow, these should be all be my radar.
And those ex-Unsolvable guys, I mean, I'm really looking forward to it when it comes out.
So we still have games to talk about.
We
I guess what we'll do is we'll take a momentary adjournment. And when we come back, we'll still talk about Space Marine. We'll still do indies. We'll still do listener feedback. We still have a fat stack of news. And I have the in-show correction. It's not a hazard pad. It's a chaos pad.
Chaos pad.
K-A-O-S-S. And it's a touchpad MIDI controller and sampler and effects processor. It's made by Korg. And basically, it lets you on the fly... let me scan down here really quickly. So the effects types include pitch shifting, distortion, filtering, wah-wah, tremolo, flangering, delay, reverb, reverberation, auto panning, gating, phasing, and ring modulation. And so that's all the different things that you can do with the way that they're building this effects processors into Lifelike as well. So
damn, that's crazy.
There you go. If you want to know more about Chaos Pads, look her up on the net. There's also some really cool videos of DJs playing with these things. It's freaking crazy. I remember Milky showing them to me like years ago.
I thought you were just like, if you want to know about more about Chaos Pads, go to my blog, chaospads.blogspot.com.
All right. We'll take a little break. We'll come back on the other side and get back to it.
This is what the game feels like. This is what the game feels
like. The tightest.
This is what the game feels like.
Loose bad controls.
I mean, the floatiness.
Tight.
You would say that it's floaty.
If you have crappy controls, you get it, but you're not worth the time.
That doesn't make me happy. The floatiness.
Too many other amazing games that are tight. The tightest.
Care Bear versus Grizzly Bear.
Fixating a little bit on a word.
I think everyone who loves Alice and hates the fact that I don't like that game, you've just given them an anthem to
I know,
despise
right?
me for. But thank you. That was awesome, dude.
No excuse for that.
Yeah.
Floaty.
Internet.
There you go. Hey, I see lots of newsy news coming up in the latter segment. So let's get back to games so we can get to the news. Who doesn't want news? I want my newsy news.
I want my newsy news. Gotta know what's up.
I know we got Space Marine. I just want to quickly say about, because I have, after last week's episode, Andy Reid was saying that maybe the reason why I didn't like Call of Duty Black Ops is because I'm not very good at it.
He's not.
So I started playing it.
And he owns some noobs, and now he thinks he's good.
And I'm so awesome at that game. So awesome.
You're the best.
But you know, I mean, I was playing for a little bit, and I'm not dying every 5 seconds like I anticipated I would be at this point, because I hadn't played the game since the first DLC was released. And I just, like, it's again happened where I'm like, oh, okay, I've got my fill in. I'm done.
All right.
I don't know. It's weird.
So you're ready to put it back down again? Already?
It has nothing to do with that game specifically. It's just, I think it's multiplayer online competitive shooters in general at this point. I'm sort of getting burned out on that. That's why I'm like, you know, we talked at length about Bastion and Orcs Must Die and stuff. Like, those new experiences, I think, are refreshing me.
It's all about the co-op, baby.
It is.
All about the co-op. I can tell you from playing couch co-op Portal 2 over the weekend, it's all about the co-op.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, so we'll talk about that just for 1 second, because Jeff said that you play with your dad all the time, right?
Yeah. He's up north in Northern California. I'm down here. But, like, every once in a while, we'll hook up on the weekends online, do a little Steam hook up, and we played through the whole co-op campaign over the span of about a month.
And I had played some online co-op, And what's really cool is when you play split screen with the same person in the room, it's an even cooler experience because there's like this whole bonding element as you're sitting there like with them, pointing to stuff on the screen and like lining out strategies together.
Right.
And you like it's a really intense, like cool, just
well, it encourages
cooperative
you to get physical with your descriptions. Like,
yes.
Like, you know, you want to use your body when you're trying to describe like a, with your hands to describe a puzzle or how it'll work or
exactly.
whatever. Yeah, and it's true. Like, I will admit that there were a few of the more convoluted puzzles in the game sort of ended with, or we figured them out where either my dad or I would figure out the solution and be like, okay, you just stand here. I'm going to go over here. And then eventually when you watch the other person, it would sort of click. But being able to be in the same room would just
yeah, I mean, you've got voice that. Communication in live, and you have the ability to like highlight areas and point to them. But it was I couldn't get over how fun that game was to play split screen. And I think part of it is like shooters, you can play split screen also, but then you feel a little hampered by the screen space. At least I have now that I've moved to like full screen stuff.
There is a lot of action going on around you too that I think really kind of takes away from the focus, whereas Portal is like you guys are strategizing together and being able to be in that same room. I got to try that. That's awesome.
That's so good.
Yeah.
It was so good. We had the best time. Anyway.
All right. Does it split horizontal or vertical? I mean, I guess it depends on the size of the television, right?
I think it's just horizontal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think there's I'm sorry. I think it's just vertical. I don't think there's a horizontal option.
Because I thought, because there's some games, I think, depending on the size of the game, the size of the screen.
I think this one's vert only because you think about how much, you know, up and down looking there is in Portal.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there's so many times where you need to be really cognizant of your elevation changes.
And it's a lot more natural to turn left and right than it is to look up and down. So if you get more real estate to begin with, it makes things easier.
I want to mention very respectable kill death ratio of 1.22. Just gonna say it right now. Say it out loud, guys. 1.2.
Like
1.4 is apparently great.
1. And 2. That is the sound of Zav patting himself on the back.
Exactly.
On the back.
He kept choosing that noobs only please server.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I'm totally honing.
I'm the best. I got my wall hack
on. There's no server selection on the Xbox 360.
I know.
Pick which group of idiots you want to play with. That's how. Wow, it got really quiet.
We're leaving.
Also, I should say that Jeff, I remember a couple weeks ago when you were on the show, you're like, I wish there was a button that said like I can like press this button and you won't play with anyone under 30. And you were telling me this after work, and I was like, that's a really good idea. I was like, wait a minute, you motherfucker! I'm 26. I'm 27.
Yeah, I mean,
so,
there are exceptions.
So all you
to
need
every
is
rule.
A button over 28.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you can drop it a couple of years.
26 or 27, because apparently I don't know how old I am.
As long as I'm not playing with Zav, whatever.
Just go to the server room that says, fuck Canadians.
That's where I always play.
Who are you playing Space Marine with?
Well, I was playing
collection
with
of journos, or were there other testers, or how?
No, it's a collection of journos.
How big is it? So tell me about the game.
So it is... Well, the multiplayer component is 8v8 matches.
Okay. So it's a pretty decent-sized match.
Pretty decent-sized match. I will say that after playing a bunch of matches, the size of the maps is very much geared towards 8v8. You could probably get down to 5v5, but I think anything below that, the maps are going to start to feel pretty big.
Okay.
So that's one note. No real reason why you wouldn't want to play full 8v8 matches.
Now, is it just Marines on Marines, or does one side play the Orcs?
It is Space Marines versus Chaos Marines, which are their evil counterparts. So, complete with evil laughs and jacked up armor and all that sort of stuff. So it's a class based game. There are two modes. There's Annihilation, which is team deathmatch, and there's a mode called Seize Ground, which is basically several different capture points on the map, hold and defend for as long as possible. Both modes are based on a clock, so whoever has the most points at the end of when the clock expires wins the match.
Are those the only two modes that are going to be in the game, or the ones that they showed?
Those are the multiplayer modes that are going to be in the game, the competitive multiplayer.
Okay.
They didn't talk about whether or not there would be
other things.
They did say that there will be more, DLC is already planned for
of course.
Multiplayer stuff. It is a class-based system, so there's three different classes of Marines on either side. three classes total, and they each have a Space Marine and a Chaos Marine counterpart. There's an Assault class, which is basically your balanced class that are, pretty decent with ranged and melee, decent combination. That's apparently the class that is the only class available when you first start playing multiplayer. So there's a whole bunch of a huge amount of unlocks, weapons, perks, all that sort of stuff layered into the game. I don't know how I get the feeling that it won't be too difficult to unlock the other classes because
that's what I was going to say. It's a little weird to have a class-based game and then you start the game and you're not allowed to select the class.
I kind of understand why they did that after playing them, because the Tactical Marine is like the one that you play and you're like, okay, this feels fairly familiar, like I know what I'm doing. When you start playing the Devastator class, for example, which is a class that uses this big, it's almost like a mobile turret that they carry around with them. They can fire, but they can also hit a button to take a knee, which makes them completely stationary and then increases their rate of fire dramatically. So I found that the Devastator class wasn't particularly good for, okay, team deathmatch, I'm running around like an idiot. It was more like, okay, we need to defend this point that we just captured. If I can get my Devastator into a corner of this control point area and get him locked down in a kneeling position, I can really, like...
You can hold ground.
I can hold ground, you know, and it's... Yeah. However, if anybody closes with me, I'm fucked because all I can do is kick them.
You get sniped in the head.
Right, so it's like really heavily balanced on the range, or weighted towards the range side with the Devastator class. Now, my favorite class, which I'm sure a lot of people's favorite class, is the Assault class.
Oh, this is the Tribes class, right?
Yeah,
class? It is. Shit.
It is... It's just really fun. It takes a minute to like get a handle on the jump pack thing, but you can basically turbo up into the air and, you know, ground pound right into the center of a group of guys. It really adds this other dimension to line of sight issues, because you're not only are you looking at everyone else who's running around on the ground, but periodically you're going to want to check to make sure that nobody's about to dive bomb into your shit and blow you up.
Sorry, I just you said dive bomb into your shit. I was like, yeah,
that's right. That's never a good thing.
You're like Michael Winslow in this episode or some shit. Is that the guy from Police Academy? All these musical riffs.
All right, sorry, that's the end of my Foley. So anyway, the Assault Marine he's probably the weakest armored of the three, mm-hmm. but
he has the most stuff available to him, right?
Well, he has the most sort of unique feeling stuff. Like, the jump pack is huge. Like, his weapons are like a chainsword and some sort of ranged weapon. That's the other thing, too, is as you progress, all of the classes have a whole bunch of unlockable weapons and stuff that are unique to that class. You can create a bunch of different loadouts. That's the other thing I found, is that the multiplayer is fast-paced enough that you'll die and then... spend like 2 seconds choosing a loadout or equipping a different gun based on the battlefield conditions. So if it's especially on a capture point map, you're like, okay, I'm either going to rush to take this ground or I'm going to be working on setting up a defensive position for something that we've already set up or some point that we've already captured. So anyway, the Assault Marine is like, you know, you dive into combat, you chop dudes up, boost out, and it's just...
Do you go in, hit, and quit it? Just bounce it out?
Well, you can. I mean, and they're, like I said, they're not as heavily armored. They do have a chainsword and a...
Yeah.
But, again, it's there. Although there are only three classes, there are enough unlockables in terms of weapons and stuff that you'll have a whole bunch of different configurations.
You can go down some very unique corridors in each one.
Yeah. I mean, there are even a couple of long-range weapons, which... Yeah.
So let me bring a question in here, because one of the things that we had here for listener feedback kind of ties into this multiplayer arena idea, and it's from MH Silver. It's a little bit long, but let me kind of roll through here, because I think when we get to the end of this, you'll see where I'm coming from. MH Silver postulates, should Call of Duty change? Lack of change is one of the more popular rationales for why it's starting to catch heat. If online multiplayer games can be viewed closer to sports, should we even demand significant changes? Sports have been around for decades, and when changes are proposed, fans often erupt because it hurts the quote-unquote purity of the game. StarCraft, arguably, would be the closest thing that gaming has to a sports culture, thanks to the situation in Korea, which has brought about a sequel a decade after the original. Major changes and advances were made in the single-player campaign, but the multiplayer, the competitive part, was kept as simple to the original as possible. The purity of the sport, if you will, kept intact. Halo Reach, though, incorporated a significant new feature with the armor abilities, and it ended up pretty much splitting the fan base between those who loved it, which is where MH Silver was, and those who felt it's not Halo anymore. So now Bungie is left trying to create playlists to satisfy each and to try and bridge the gap. So should we start accepting that competitive multiplayer modes should be treated differently than single player when it comes to our expectations for change and advancement? And since we're talking about it in context of maybe Space Marine, mm-hmm. do you think Space Marine brings anything new to the table, or is it relying on the old world? Where do you guys fall on this with expectations for change and advancement, or do you want the same old thing?
Oh, well, that's really interesting, actually. The Space Marine is kind of in a split camp with regard to that. It feels – the pacing of the multiplayer feels a lot more like an old Quake match, or you know, you're not doing a whole lot of route memorization because it's a lot of wide open spaces and a few corridors, but really, you know, you've got a central hub area and there are multiple pathways to get there. You're more like, okay, select my character loadout. I'm charging into combat. And as you're charging towards the battle, you're like, okay, I can see there are three dudes over here fighting. I'm going to, you know, go around and try to flank them, or, but you're deciding all this stuff while you're actually physically running right at them.
Right. I mean, how does it compare to something like Gears of War? Because I think that's going to be the comparison people hate making. But in terms of, you know, you have those sort of similar sized characters, the difference being that there's no cover in Space Marine. Mm-hmm. Have you played Gears of War multiplayer?
Yeah, a bit.
I mean, how does it compare to something like that?
The pacing is completely different because you're now, Gears of War is a very fast paced game as well.
And there's a lot of melee in it.
And there's a lot of melee, but this is more like, like you dive into a pile of three dudes in Space Marine and you're chainsword, and you're like, you know, whipping around and stuff. And it's not like the Gears of War thing where you're like, engage one dude, hit a button, chop him in half, curb stomp him, whatever. Yeah. It's very much more like, you take a guy down and as his corpse is hitting the ground, you're like, your sword's swiping through another dude. So it's very much more like a... kind of feels more Darksider-y, I guess.
And those characters are more powerful than like the Gears of War people, right? Because the whole Gears of War thing is like you need to get into cover because if you run into open gunfire, you're just going to get smoked.
Yeah,
you know?
these guys are like
hammered pretty quickly here.
Yeah, I mean, but
these guys are like 9 foot tall, like genetically engineered behemoths. Like they're not your typical like Marines. They're huge,
right?
Wearing huge armor. What was the sorry, did you have a
question? No, I was just wondering whether or not, because it is a cover-based shooter. I mean, the reason that, you know, those characters in Gears of War, you know, are susceptible to so much damage so quickly is because, you know, you use that cover mechanic in order to protect yourself, whereas this game doesn't have that mechanic. I mean, in fact, when they first showed off the game, they're like, we don't use cover, we blast through cover. I mean, there's moves in the single player, I don't know if it's in the multiplayer as well, where you literally charge into cover and destroy cover.
There's really no cover that I saw to speak of in these maps. I mean, there were some pretty cool designs. Like there was this one map that was looked like sort of if the Golden Gate Bridge had been like half collapsed or whatever. It obviously wasn't the Golden Gate Bridge. So it was this huge bridge, and it was two layers of freeway, and you know there were two levels basically that you could traverse and stuff. So it created this interesting situation where you had some areas with really long line of sight stuff, like in the middle of the map for a control point, and guys would be sniping, and then you'd have other guys flanking around with their big, heavily armored dudes with chainswords. And
to go back to MH Silver's question, though, I think specifically what he's calling out here is Call of Duty doesn't change, is what?
No, it doesn't. But I think but it's interesting because
it does. I mean, there's a very big difference between Modern Warfare 1, Black Ops, and Modern Warfare 2. I mean, there's death streaks in Modern Warfare 2 that really affect the way that the players that are not doing very well or performing very well, they get death streaks. I mean, the perks themselves are very different in a lot of the games. You know, the loadouts are different.
We're talking nuance changes.
It's iterative stuff. Like,
if you go to the sport, but we're talking about the sports analogy here, we have this, we do see adjustments, you know, from the comp, for instance, I know NFL. So you see the NFL competition committee every year review the rules and make adaptations to adjust the game rules such that the game that's on the field plays to the way they think they'll be entertaining for the audience and makes a good performance on the field. And I think that you see that sort of tweaking, but we don't see wholesale. I mean, there's no wholesale adaptation of the rules. It's small tweaks.
Well, it makes it harder for games like Call of Duty or Halo to innovate. And I would argue
I don't know that it does.
I would argue that you don't really need to innovate. If you're talking about esports stuff, like people want that. They want to know what to expect from the game. And yeah, you might be able to get away with some iterative changes like the armor stuff. But there's a fine line between, like, if somebody, like when I was really heavily into Counter-Strike beta, you know, that was sort of the same thing. Every time a new beta would come out, the tweaks were so minor and for the most part were improvements, but you'd have a whole bunch of reactions.
I don't understand how you can make the comparison of like a minor tweak or an iterative change to something like Halo with the armor abilities, which he says was the thing that changed for Halo.
You were talking about Call of Duty.
No, but I'm saying I think that that is a change that happens within what you're playing as you're, you know, how you play moment to moment. Whereas I think that the perk system and the killstreak stuff and the decisions you make that are different throughout each game in Call of Duty does change, not from moment to moment, but through at the end of every encounter. I mean, you have new things opening up to you. I mean, they do change little things like, you know.
But according to Andy, that's all done by level 45.
Anyway, so it's the thing that I think that does change the most. I mean, one of the things that changed the most is, you know, kill streaks in the original Modern Warfare used to count towards like when you use a kill streak, it used to count towards your next kill streak.
Right. Now
you
it doesn't. I
mean? Now it doesn't.
So see, to my mind, that's the sort of tweaks that the NFL competition committee makes, for instance, for how they treat protection of the quarterback while he's in the pocket.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, it's like. It's changing where you can tackle and what part of the body you can tackle and that sort of stuff.
But I mean, like, there are different changes in terms of the loadouts that you have. There are different changes in terms of the perks and the kill streaks. That stuff, I think, is the big change. At its fundamental core, yes, those games are very similar.
See, so I think we're kind of going around the answers here that both Red Swirl and Improbable J came up, which is the two sides of this, which is like Red Swirl said the problem isn't that it doesn't change, it's that Activision releases a new one every year when the previous game was probably just fine, which it might be just fine if you did make adjustments like what Zav's talking about. Like, you know, for instance, if you see people are exploiting the perks by using them towards their next kill streak, then you could change that theoretically, right?
Well, yeah.
And then Improbable J says on the other side that, you know, he says, I think from the outside looking in, it's ideal to want releases to be more spaced out. It's like casual sports fans, though, saying that all sports game really needs at this point is roster updates until many years later when they can come up with a game that's with some more fancy tech. But for those who are deep in the series, they are going to care because, you know, it is like watching the FIFA fan or the Madden fan who knows, you know, we might look and say, oh, yeah, we just need to update the rosters or whatever. And even if it's small stuff, they're like, wow, this is so much better, or wow, they really missed on this feature. Like, people are looking forward to in FIFA the precision dribbling. It's not, they aren't overhauling the entire, I mean, that is a big change in the physics.
Yeah,
but
one thing I will say about the new Modern Warfare that's coming out is that it's very disappointing that this is, you know, the third game in that series, and it's still using this, I mean, it's using the same engine, essentially.
Yep.
And they've been using the same engine since, I think, Call of Duty 3? Or what did they also use?
You mean Modern Warfare?
No, I mean Call of Duty 3. The
one
that
World
Treyarch
at War?
Did, World at War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is
that Call of Duty 3? I think I think it's the same engine. Anyway,
well, I think it's the same engine as basically as Modern Warfare.
Was before Call of Duty 3.
Yeah,
no, it wasn't. That was Call of Duty 4. Never mind.
I mean, should I remember when?
God damn it! There's so many Call of Duty games.
I remember when they used to release map packs for free. I mean, that's how fucking old I am.
That's like, how fucking old I am.
Get the hell out of here! What are you talking about?
Get off my lawn,
kid.
Games were a nickel, and they gave away map packs for free.
I don't want to hear any more about it. Let's see some other stuff that came up this week in the forums. I like this one. Red Swirl threw out this question. He says, do you think the core console gaming audience, let's say the audience that likes to play games on conventional controllers with analog sticks, is growing as fast as it should be? Most of the explosion in the video game market in the last few years has been in motion control, social gaming, and mobile gaming. Do you think core gaming has stagnated in terms of growth compared to that? And I'm just talking independent of general population growth.
I mean, if you look at the trends in terms of sales, the game industry in general is on a downswing right now in terms of new physical retail sales when it comes to these consoles. And the games that sell the most are core games, so there could be something to that. I think that in terms of bringing new people in, the original hope I think everyone had was that people would play a casual game or you play a Facebook game and then you decide, you know what, I think I like games now and I'm going to go out and buy something else. Is it really changing fundamentally the way that games are being developed or the way that people are designing games? I don't really necessarily think so. We're still getting our core games.
Oh, yeah. We still get core games. However, that's become a very high risk-reward proposition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it always kind
of
has been.
But, of course, it always has been. However, the budgets have really escalated to a pretty high tier. I mean, if you want to go out and be competitive at a $60 price point for a boxed game – then you're on those shelves against those Call of Duties and Battlefields and Oblivions. And
hey,
and
we're going to talk about it in the news. Shadows of the Damned, core game, uses the controller.
Yep.
No one bought it. Child of Eden, a game that I think is mostly synonymous with the Kinect, although you can use a controller. It's connected to the Kinect in that sense. No one bought that either.
Well, although I will say that's the only game so far that has made me really take pause with, because I don't own a Kinect yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one game where I'm like, I should maybe think about getting one of these now. Well, that and Mass Effect 3.
So here's the
core
on
gamer
that
would be.
Since you brought this subject up, Child of Eden, according to the NPD, sold around 34,000 copies. It was an Xbox 360 exclusive. Shadows of the Damned, across both PS3 and 360, only managed 24,000 in sales.
Yet Duke Nukem was second fucking place on the NPD last month. Ridiculous.
And Zelda Ocarina of Time was way up there. Infamous 2. So both of those are single platform games, and they were both all way up there. Look, we can talk about any number of other factors, but I can point right now to a very clear thing about the difference here. You could not get away from Duke Nukem marketing. You couldn't find Shadows of the Dam or Child of Eden marketing.
Yeah.
You couldn't find it if you looked.
Right.
And it's interesting because in chatting with some folks about this, you get that impression of, well, it was sent to die. You know, it was turned out there without any support. And you almost get this feeling of some sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. It's as if after being so excited about these projects, and especially if you look at the way EA presented Shadows of the Damned, both at E3 and at GDC, we've got these rock star game designers. We're really excited about this. It's super creative. They told the enthusiast press.
Yes.
Did they tell anybody else?
See, they could have just, I mean, all it would have taken is one fake Grindhouse movie trailer advertisement that was really good that you're like, what the hell is this? I have to see this.
As tied into the movie business as gaming is, how did someone at EA not pick up the phone and at least call Tarantino and Rodriguez and say, guys, we'd like to show you, like, hey, you know what? Can we buy you dinner and show you this? Because we think it's kind of fucking cool and we think you'd kind of like it.
Yeah.
Right.
And you can tell us to piss off, but we think you dig it.
Yeah, no, and there's a lot of things they could have done other than just sitting on their hands.
I think it speaks to two things. The first being that it is easier to promote a game that is silly and stupid and has a very simplistic idea behind it, like a Duke Nukem is.
Sure.
Of like, hey, cool dude.
Saves cool the dude. World from aliens.
Yeah, cool dude, hot chicks. Boom. Play this motherfucking game. Whereas Child of Eden, how do you market that in a commercial showing people waving their arms? It's a difficult proposition.
Okay, so
but also
pull the comparison to Shadows, because I think there you're closer, because like here's a game
you are, but I mean that is a very niche, like weird dude, kind of title.
Here's a game that kicks off in Duke Nukem. Here's a game that kicks off with two girls giving him a blowjob, and they weren't worried.
It's not in the commercial though,
and they weren't worried at all about marketing that versus Shadows of the Damned, which I mean has some racy bits to it, but it's way more playful. Like Shadows of the Damned is way more contemporary and cool and hip than Duke ever dreamt about being.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I continued playing Duke Nukem, and it's not a good game. Fuck off. I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. I wonder if it speaks to the fact that it's not a part of the EA Partners program.
What isn't?
To help promote those games effectively the way
Well, then
that
what the fuck are they picking them up for? They're publishing them.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just a distribution thing. Maybe I have no idea what their program calls for, but I can't I mean, Rock
Dude,
Band...
What,
I mean, even fucking Rock Band couldn't even sell as well as other platforms, other games
so
of the same ilk.
So here is a bullshit problem in that EA is out there doing a good job marketing and promoting their internal studios, and then they do these partner things, and only occasionally do they get that level of support. It's only the BioWares with Mass Effects that get that sort of support. Where was that support for Shadows of Damn, it's how on earth that is the if you're a Grasshopper manufacturer, the mm-hmm. reason you go to do business with EA is because you expect them to do those things that you're a development studio. You don't have marketing people,
yeah.
You don't have PR people, and you don't have distribution people. So you get a contract with a publisher to do those things. It's going to be really interesting to me to see how EA handles their Insomniac relationship.
You know what?
Because they better not fuck that
here's,
up.
Here, I mean that'll be really interesting. Here's the thing that is even sadder about it. And I don't dislike PopCap. I like PopCap, but you're going to see more advertising about PopCap games from EA than you will ever see about any of these partner programs put together.
Probably true.
And I think that they need to restructure that. If that is the case, I mean, if you look back at all the partner stuff that they've developed or helped distribute, there have been low sales in terms of expectation out of all of them, including Rock Band Beatles. I mean, sorry, that speaks to maybe the genre. At the same time, there's definitely a wrench that's in those works that need to be pulled out so those gears can move freely.
They were behind Rock Band for a while. Now, they were for a while. They jumped on the Rock Band pretty heavy. I mean, they were promoting that everywhere for a while.
Yeah.
But that's easy to promote.
Maybe they just felt it was not easy to promote.
And that's what I think it goes down to is if you have an edgy new IP that hasn't been proven in the marketplace yet, those big publishers aren't. I don't know if it's that they're reluctant to market it, but they're just like, I don't know how the fuck we're going to market this thing.
Shadows is one thing. How to promote Child, I couldn't even fucking begin to tell you.
I agree. There's a lot of challenges there. However, if you are these publishers, if you're Ubisoft picking up Child, or if you're EA, jumping to go do work with Grasshopper, how do you come at it from one moment being so excited and so enthusiastic about working with these people and working with these studios and working with these games and give them the hopes that, obviously these are passionate people who are very attached to what they're making, who really feel like, oh, great, I've got someone who's going to support me. They really get it. And then you come to market with hope someone knows that I'm standing over here in the corner selling my game.
That's the fundamental flaw of these giant big box publishers like Activision and EA doing these partner programs. And it'll be interesting to see how THQ does it a little bit differently because they're a smaller company, because they focus their attention on the games that they're releasing in that moment. Whereas EA is, scattershot. They have so much shit going on that, Shadows is done. Fuck it. We're good. Like, they don't really focus on it anymore.
Sadly, it's a rhetorical question because the reality here is that I realize as we're sitting here talking about it, I actually don't know the answer.
Yeah.
But I really am quite curious to know how a publisher decides and, invests the effort to get into this deal and then decides, we're not going to follow through on it. And maybe it speaks to even the language in the agreements, that they do with I don't know what the publisher to studio agreement looks like, but however, I do know that if these studios were relying on revenues from the game sales solely to make their money out of it, they're in a really crappy situation. And we don't know how much advance money was played out from the publisher, but they may look at it and say, we got this game and we've only put this much into it.
And maybe they should look at, not throwing, tons of money at a game like Duke Nukem Forever, and maybe saving a few of those dollars for the new IP. I mean, because the new IPs always get the shaft.
Couple of wrap-up comments from Bailey and from Going Commando. Bailey said that, these both speak to like the growth of the core versus the niche market. Bailey says that he thinks it's easy to say it's not growing fast enough, but only when you compare it to social gaming scene because the social gaming scene is just it's at that beginning part of the curve where it's really exploding. Something pointed out was that. That there's always negativity focused on developers when they try to simplify their games to try to, reach a broader market. So, for instance, a Fable or a Final Fantasy XIII. However, he pointed out that Forza did a really good job of delivering a experience across the spectrum of experience that for, a high-end driver with a wheel who wanted full sim was great, and for someone who just wanted to casually pick up the controller and play the game was also great. And then Going Commando 117 said, I think the core audience is growing just fine, but the pace of audience growth isn't keeping up with the pace of development costs, which speaks to what Jeff was talking about earlier. He says you need to sell a lot more copies to make more money, but the increase in the number of copies you need to sell far outweighs the increase in the number of people willing to buy them.
Grasshopper, I have a lot of respect for, because although this has happened to them again and again and again, I mean, this has happened to them in the past, they continue to announce new games that are fucking crazy as shit.
Well, and the good news for Grasshopper is they have some good licensed titles that help, provide another pillar of support for the studio. And God bless them because they do some really creative stuff. I love Shadows. We're going to talk. We got their next game coming up in Newsy News, which involves a cheerleader and zombies. And
of course,
game of the year.
You can't beat that right there. Coming up right now, however, we have Come to Shanghai with Eternal Life Volume 1, Track 1.
Thank you.
real music from real people and support them, go to www.icometoshanghai.com and listen to their music. And I think that you like Sam and I were talking about, you can pay them what you want for it. So yep. Pay them. They're good guys. That's Robert Ashley and Sam Freegard on I Come to Shanghai. So now on with newsy news.
Newsy news. Before we start, Jeff, I know you had a couple indie things you wanted to hit there.
Sure.
You want to maybe give me some of that indie tip, because we kind of missed the indie stuff.
Sure. Yeah. This will be real quick. This is more like a heads up for some folks. Spaz, Space Pirates and Zombies, you guys might remember us talking about that a while back.
I do remember that. I need to play that game tape still.
And everybody was like, oh my God, that looks so great. I would play it if it was on Steam.
Everyone speaks like that, so that is true.
Yep. And so, well, guess what? It's going to be on Steam on August 15th.
No way.
So, no more excuses. Check it out. Let's see here. Cthulhu Saves the World and Breath of Death 7. The devs have made a statement that they've sold more on Steam in the first week of having that thing on sale for $3 than they did the entire year that they had them on Xbox Live Indie Games channel. Just some food for thought.
I don't think anybody would be surprised by that, because they weren't on Xbox Live Arcade. They were on Xbox Live Indie channel.
Which is promoted like absolute crap. It's now on a bright and shining note for Indie Games channel, Xbox Live Indie Games channel, that doesn't come along very often. Their Summer Uprising games, there's like 8 of them right now, look actually pretty good by and large.
There's lots of cool stuff going on there. They need to be more active doing things along the lines of Summer Uprising.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and this is a community-driven initiative. This isn't something
Winter
Microsoft.
Uprising, which is what they did first. Mm-hmm. It was really successful. I think it was so successful, we were talking about this before, that Microsoft was like, oh shit, maybe we should put a thing on the Game Center
whatever
the fuck it's called.
There's a lot of room for improvement on how... Yeah, good titles are highlighted because they're hard to find.
I mean, literally, if Microsoft ever does get concerned about their, you know, comparative reputation for artistic games versus PlayStation Network, which I think PlayStation Network enjoys a very high reputation, high regard for, you know, artistic endeavors, they have nowhere to look but the mirror, because obviously you've had these avenues for stuff and you just haven't promoted it, because you go out and promote all the licensed titles, all the arcade stuff.
I will play devil's advocate for a second and say that of the three platforms, it is the only platform that allows for this to happen. But
okay,
they
agree.
Don't do a good job at all.
You guys kind of missed on this last week. I mean, they've had some great artistic games.
Come on,
fucking Limbo.
No, I was saying that they've done art house game before. It was,
but somehow they don't get the reputation.
Crazy.
They don't get the reputation for it, because what they choose to more aggressively market are the more marketable titles. Yeah. I use the air quotes for that, but the stuff that's. Whatever.
Anyway. I mean, Limbo was a part. Wasn't that a part of a Summer of Arcade? Braid was a part of the original Summer Arcade. That's an art house game, if I've ever seen one too. So.
Yeah, but those are XBLA things.
Right. Like, no, I know we're talking.
Yeah, yeah.
And even then, they don't promote them as much as they promote.
They're all around. There could be a lot more. I mean, they're missing out on a lot of opportunities, not just for the devs who deserve some recognition for good work, but you know, there's ways for them to capitalize on this too and make a win for everyone.
I agree 100%.
Speaking of developers that deserve some recognition, we were just talking about Grasshopper Manufacture, and you teased this game that was just announced for the Xbox 360 and
PS3.
I love
the name.
Lollipop Chainsaw. Yep. Brand new game from Grasshopper. Suda 51. God bless you, sir. In this game, you control Juliet, a cheerleader at San Romero High School. Get it? Romero? Huh? Get it?
I love it.
Unfortunately, zombies appear at her school on her 18th birthday, and so she has to wield a pink chainsaw, of course, and use her cheerleader-inspired acrobatic skills in order to defeat the undead menace.
You know, I've never like made any sort of like thing about like jumping sides of this business. I would certainly, in a heartbeat, go design games with Suda, because it would be amazing. It would be basically you could just sit around and dream up the most awesome ideas, and he would come up with ways to frame them into, you know, digestible pieces, and you'd work with like someone who was like a really senior designer, and you'd get like game mechanics that go with it, and suddenly you'd have Lollipop Chainsaw. But does it say anything more about like what she does?
I mean, you're a cheerleader, so you have cheerleader acrobatic skills that
awesome.
You use. The one thing that's cool about the screenshots that were shown through at Famitsu had the screenshots is your chainsaw is not only this pink chainsaw, but there's also a severed head that's dangling from the side of it.
Of course there is.
And the dangling head is like a, it looks like a bar, it looks, it's like a Barbie, a Ken doll person. It was like perfect looking dude who's just smiling.
Of course.
It's like, what's like fuck a key,
it's like
on?
A, it's like a cell phone fob.
It is like a cell phone
it's
fob.
It's like a cell phone
dude,
fob.
It probably lights up now, and shit when she gets a text message.
Are you sure it's attached to the chainsaw? Because I did see the head, but I saw some shots where she was wielding the saw and she had that thing on her, that head on her hip. It was like attached.
I'm assuming. I don't know. Maybe it moves around. It could be a game mechanic. Who knows? Maybe that is their version of Johnson. Maybe that's Johnson before he turned into a staff thing. I don't know. Staff thing. That's what it was called, right? The staff thing?
You mean before he got shafted?
Before he got shafted. Yes. Yeah, there you go.
That is exactly right.
So speaking of franchises, Guitar Hero. Oh God, sigh with me, ladies and gentlemen.
My heart rate's going to go up because I read this quote already and it pissed me off.
Guitar Hero to be reinvented, says Activision CEO. So, Bobby Kotick was talking to Forbes magazine, talking about the reason why the Guitar Hero franchise failed and why DJ Hero wasn't a success. And he mentioned something that I think a lot of people thought when DJ Hero was first announced, that who really wants to unlock their inner DJ? But the game ended up being a critical success. Unfortunately, no one picked it up. The game did not sell very well, and Guitar Hero, after very many years, ended up losing its audience, and the entire franchise was put on hiatus. The thing that bothers me the most about what he was saying is that there was no he mentioned that the audience for DJ Hero wasn't as big as Guitar Hero, but it speaks to what we were talking about, the marketing. There is just as much fun in DJ Hero, and I know you love DJ Hero. Sir.
I do. That quote just pisses me off so much. It's so like, oh, I need a scapegoat. Oh, I'm gonna explain it away. It has nothing to do with anything else.
You know what? I think it has more to do with the fact that they're releasing a freaking plastic peripheral game every year without fail, and then you get to the point where you're like, dude, I got like three guitars and fucking drums and whatever. Do I really need a turntable?
I mean, he also compared it to, who wants to play this game to get points when you could just go out and buy a DJ deck and play with it on your Mac? It's like totally different fucking experience. Like, that's a game versus you're creating something.
And really, I mean, there's a significant learning curve to doing the other.
Significant. And I mean, you know,
his quote about like not, his other one about not want, about people not wanting 80s music and Guitar Hero anymore. No, actually, Bobby, what people really wanted a lot more of was focused. Well, actually, what people wanted a lot more of was access to music, period.
Right.
Because you kept doing these weird games where you had everything from soup to nuts and you didn't make anybody happy. There's probably people who wanted 80s. There's probably people who wanted 90s. There's probably people who wanted metal. There's probably people who wanted, you know, indie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But instead, what you did was give me games where I had to buy a $60 game that had three or four tracks of each.
Right.
So in terms of Guitar Hero, Bobby Kotick said that they're going to take the game out of the public eye, which they've already done, and they're going to stop talking about it so people don't know what they're doing. And then this is the quote, and then we're going to go back to the studios and we're going to use the new studios and reinvent Guitar Hero. And that's what we're going to do with it now. Does the industry need a resurgence of Guitar Hero?
You know,
are we still not in? I'm fucking piles and piles of plastic guitar bullshit. Like Salvation Army probably looks like a graveyard of plastic Fisher Price fucking toys. Why? I don't understand why you want to revisit this.
I'm more of a Rock Band guy than a Guitar Hero guy, but I still put Rock Band in, and I will still occasionally download a new track for that game.
Well, and there was your answer, because Rock Band did a much better job, although not great, but a better job.
But a better
the online
job.
Music store
and. That will translate, I'm convinced, into when my 360 goes the way, they stop making games for the 360. I will probably have a 360 in my house that is just full of Rock Band shit that I will use as a, you know, karaoke / party game device that will live in the living room and just be there. And nothing else but Rock Band will live on there. You know?
I think it depends what reinvent means, because what they didn't do and what they weren't willing to do. And I think this applies both to Harmonix and to Neversoft and the Guitar Hero team. So they weren't willing to adapt the model as the player base changed. Mm-hmm. In other words, they originally came out with something that was very unique because without talking about Guitar Freaks and all that, let's just take for granted that Guitar Hero was like where it
the first
fire.
Breakthrough.
So
breakout.
We didn't have all those things. So we bought them because we needed the guitar and because it was a unique experience and it like suddenly caught on and all that. But after that, like you said, we didn't need a graveyard of more toys. The model for that product mm-hmm. needed to change and adapt to the way the audience had changed, but it never did. They just kept trying to beat us over the head with another $60 iteration.
I don't know, maybe if you don't agree with this, but I think even Harmonix got it wrong, where the game was intended to be a platform. Rock Band was intended to be a platform, yet there were three retail versions of the game.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I think
they kept coming back with new platforms.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Which may have something to do with the EA partners agreement that they had. There are a lot of these questions we can ask.
I think it probably had a lot to do with, you know, as the execs looked at those games, they knew they were making a lot of money on those very inexpensively manufactured plastic guitars and drums. You know, they're buying them out of China for not very much money. China's a gross generalization. They're buying them from a manufacturing plant someplace where they're made very inexpensively and then putting them inside a fancy package and selling them for a lot of markup.
Yeah.
I mean, is this not the first year that we will not receive one of those games? There's no Guitar Hero game in 2011. There's no Rock Band game in 2011.
For the first time in like 5 or 6 years?
For the first time in 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And in 5 or 6 years, how many of those games came out?
A lot.
Ridiculous.
Too many.
A couple.
So yeah, at Comic-Con, if you're at Comic-Con right now, you may have noticed that Capcom has announced a brand new game. Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 was announced.
It's not really brand new.
Not really brand new. Repackaged. 12 new characters. And here's the interesting thing is they accidentally leaked the characters that are going to be added to the game. So here's a quick rundown. Firebrand from Ghosts and Goblins is going to be in the game. Strider, Phoenix Wright, Virgil, who's the bad guy, DMC3. Nemesis from Resident Evil, and Frank West on the Capcom side.
Phoenix Wright's going to be awesome.
Phoenix Wright, yeah.
Point attack.
Done. I object.
Marvel, you have Hawkeye, Ghost Rider, Doctor Strange, Iron Fist, Nova, and Rocket Raccoon.
Of course.
Dude, if Phoenix Wright gets to beat the crap out of dudes with word bubbles,
that would be awesome.
That would be fucking awesome.
Some of these decisions make sense. Hawkeye, you know why Hawkeye's in the game. Hawkeye's in the game because the Avengers movie is coming out next year, and Hawkeye is a character in that movie. They're doing another Ghost Recon. They're doing another Ghost Rider movie. You got to have a Ghost Rider character in there. So a lot of these Marvel decisions make sense. Like all of the people in the Avengers movie, are essentially all of the people, are in this franchise now.
Mm-hmm.
So those Marvel decisions make sense. But I mean, like, really, Virgil? Do I need a fourth DMC character in this series? Do I need a fifth Resident Evil? Where the fuck is Mega Man?
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, have you
not seen that they've disavowed any knowledge of Mega Man?
They have disavowed any knowledge of Mega Man. Let's move
He's been excommunicated.
He has. So, back in March, Mega Man Universe, which was this game that was supposed to celebrate the Mega Man franchise, was canceled. And Capcom was working on a Mega Man Legends 3 title for the 3DS and also a downloadable version of that game, which was sort of a prototype version. And both titles got canceled, unfortunately. The sad thing is that in May, when the game was supposed to come out, the prototype version was going to come out, the producer asked for fans to be patient because the game was just going to come out in a little while. Fortunately, that means wait indefinitely because both of those games have been canceled. And they said that they regrettably announced the discontinuation of this project and go on to tell people in the blog post on the Capcom community forum that the reason why they made this decision is because it did not meet its quality standards. So I was having a discussion with people on Twitter about this, and there was one person specifically who was having this discussion with me and found this choice quote from Capcom Europe. Now, this is, again, remember, they said that the reason why they canceled this game is because it didn't meet their quality mark. Capcom Europe tweeted this: "It's a shame the fans didn't want to get more involved. If we saw there was an audience for Mega Man Legend 3, people might have changed their minds." What the fuck is Capcom doing? I don't understand. Like, listen, I'm a big fan of Street Fighter, and I'm probably going to pick up the Marvel vs. Capcom 3 Ultimate Edition.
I think Dragon's Dogma sort of answers the question of what they're doing.
That, yeah, okay. You cannot, for the life of me, I don't understand how a company is silly enough to at one point say it didn't meet quality standards, which is fair, and then turn around and say, you know what, and then throw the blame at the consumer, throw the blame at the people who actually want the game. Oh no, if you showed us that you wanted it more, maybe we wouldn't have canceled it. It's your fault that this happened. Fuck you. No, it's your fault.
Zab's kind of passionate about this. He's really wrapped up.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Like, I don't understand. If it's a business decision because the game would have sucked, I would understand that, which is originally what they said. But when you turn around and Capcom Europe is tweeting that, oh no, if you guys paid attention to it a little bit more, then maybe we would have released it. No, I mean,
Mega Man fans haven't really, you know, they haven't spoken up very much about
this.
No,
you know what? I don't think anyone even noticed that all these games got canceled, that Mega Man Universe got canceled, that Legends and Prototype got canceled, that there's no Mega Man character in Marvel vs. Capcom. Come on.
See, clearly, we reached the same decision they would have.
And you know what? It's hilarious that if you look at the FAQ for this game after it got canceled for Mega Man Legend 3, they said, oh, by the way, it has nothing to do with the fact that Inafune left. back in October after working for us for 23 years. The guy who created this franchise, even though we've canceled every single Mega Man product after he's left the company because he said he no longer agreed with what we were doing, has nothing to do with it.
Unrelated.
Unrelated. Yeah. Okay.
Redacted.
Fucking, absolutely.
Fucking stupid.
Nothing to see here.
Do you need your heart medication now?
I think I might need my heart. I'm going to take a sip of water.
All right.
I just think, you know, it's. I understand the frustration from fans. You know, I would rather see. I mean, I tweeted this too. It's like, I don't want to live in a world where Sonic games keep coming out and Mega Man games stop coming out. I like Sonic.
I can't argue that.
Totally different company, obviously, Sega. I'm not a fan of Sonic, but, you know, that is a legendary franchise for Capcom.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're throwing it away. I mean, it's the anniversary of Mega Man. That was what Universe was going to celebrate. They've thrown it away. I don't understand what they're doing.
And conceptually, where they were at TGS last year was a cool place. I mean, I remember seeing it in their suite and playing it, and yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of curious to know how many people I'm sort of medium on a new Mega Man game.
Medium?
Yeah, just kind of like, I mean, I'd play it, and I loved Mega Man back.
Yeah.
Early.
Medium like a 5 or medium like a 7?
6.4.
I just, you know,
technical.
For me, it's like, you know, I'm a big fan of the franchises that they have, but it's just like, it's disappointed me when I see that, you know, in the last year and a half, there have been 4 different releases for Dead Rising. There were the 2 downloadable games. There's going to be the new one coming out this year. And then,
oh, can
Dead
I just
Rising
say,
2.
I'm flabbergasted that Frank West is appearing in yet another fucking game. Like, yeah. Really? Anyway, sorry. That's whatever. Just my own personal. He's been in one game and then a bunch of DLC.
Well, he's coming out in a brand new game.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it, but you know what? You know,
I'll start sleeping again.
It's ridiculous. I just think it's funny. I do understand the passion for people. If you look at the comments on Gaff, if you look at the comments at Shaq News, people who really like Mega Man Legends or Mega Man in general are very disappointed by this decision.
I don't think it's the end of the line for Mega Man.
I don't think that they're throwing it away, but I think that, you know, when you...
If your Inafune tract is potentially on target, it's maybe just a matter of let's you know, clear the pipes, let's back up and get to figure out which of the members of our team is the right person to direct a, you know, proper Mega Man.
It's the Guitar Hero.
Well, I mean, and know, one mentality. Thing that I would...
Exactly.
Stop talking about exactly. It for a while, reinvent the series.
Right. Well,
so, I mean, the thing that would make sense with there. this original argument that they were making is, like, you know, Inafune had his hands in both of those projects and left. So it would make sense that these games would get canceled and they'd do something else. But then it's the tweet that pissed me off where it's like, oh, if you guys would have paid attention more, maybe we wouldn't have canceled it. It's like, don't throw that in the face of your fans.
Yeah, well, you know what? That's probably just an ill-advised, frustrated tweet.
Yeah.
It's probably someone who, it could well even be someone who themselves wanted to see that stuff come out and feels like
that could be
fan frustration from them as well.
Super yeah. passionate about it and just like feels burned themselves.
It's true. Let's move on to some delays. The Darkness 2 was delayed until 2012, now coming out in February. It was supposed to come out this October in the middle of Gears of War and Battlefield, if you believe that. So now it's been pushed. We're starting to see this now a lot, where games are starting to get out of that fourth quarter. This is the time of the year where that starts to happen a lot, where, you remember all those games that were supposed to come out in 2010 at the end of the year ended up getting pushed. I think it happened to Dead Space 2 was one of those games. I think I ended up getting pushed to January of this year. So that's starting to happen too. Announcements: GoldenEye Reloaded, the Wii version, the Christian Spicer's Game of the Year, also Plan C, which we totally forgot about.
Which, by the way, someone pointed out that the reason we didn't click to that was because the CH sound is more of a K sound, and so it's evidently phonetically natural to just sort of, if you're mentally scanning for C's, scan back past that.
I thought it was just because I didn't like Christian.
It was still pretty pathetic on our parts. And
I'm kidding.
We love you, Christian.
Christian's awesome.
Yeah, we do.
So, GoldenEye Reloaded is a HD upgrade coming to the 360 and PS3 of the Wii GoldenEye game that was Christian's Game of the Year.
I played a good bit of it. It was very fun. It was a very good game.
It's such a weird game because it's a remake of... So the Wii game is a remake of a classic game that's not really a remake because they only had the license to make the first level because they have the license for the movie.
Right.
And Rare owns the licensing for all the other levels,
yes.
So they had to make new levels. So this is a remake of that remake that's not really... It's like, what the... You know.
It's going to be interesting to see how much of the remaking is simply, oh, well, we'll put some new artwork in here and, you know, we'll up-res the textures, and how much they go in and actually say, okay, well, you know what? We're on a much more sophisticated platform. We can do better geometry. we can do more AI, more physics, more characters. Well, are they going to actually go through and take those steps, or is it just going to be like, oh, we'll slap a coat of paint on this baby and kick her out?
Yeah, Sean Connery's doing the voice acting.
They are adding a few multiplayer. Yeah, that's going the other direction.
Yeah, no.
They're adding a couple of multiplayer modes. Some new content is going to be added to the game as well. So I guess we'll see when the actual final product comes out. Here's a news story I put in here just for you, Mr. Lee.
Oh, thank you.
Tomb Raider was losing relevance before reboot.
Oh, I've heard this argument. It's fucking ridiculous.
Global brand manager at Square Enix, Carl Stewart, said in an interview with Rock Paper Shotgun that he felt that Lara Croft was losing some relevance in the gaming world, that she was a little too hard and removed. We wanted to make her more approachable and relatable. I think this is a perfect time for us to reimagine the franchise, taking Lara back to her roots. That is the part I want to get your opinion on. I'm already laughing because do you think that what you've seen in Tomb Raider is bringing it back to Lara Croft to her roots?
No.
Was her roots being dragged through mud and orgasming while she's doing it?
No.
I don't know.
Stop trying to sell me, the old Tomb Raider fan, on your new Tomb Raider and make the goddamn Tomb Raider you've decided you're going to make and just get the hell over it. Obviously decided, and I'm just speaking in generalist terms, but they've obviously decided, you being the big third person, you've obviously made the decision that you're going to make this game the way you want to make it, that you wanted to go this direction. Hey, great. Okay. You won a lot of, obviously, a ton of people love it. I recognize I'm in the minority. I'm fine with that. But don't
you mean
try
on the new game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in the minority. No, stop trying to sell me on it. If you want, you guys did a great Crystal Dynamics. You did a fantastic job with the three games that you made. As a matter of fact, I will go as far as to say that to me, Crystal Dynamics is the stronger bearer of the torch than Core ever was. Core did a good job with the first game, a better job with the second game, and then ground it into the dust with the way they handled the franchise thereafter. And
remember Crystal, Angel of Darkness?
I do. I remember struggling through loading every five steps and trying to handle it. But
like Lara is more akin, in my mind, to like, you know, the 80s action hero. Like, I mean, closer to Duke Nukem than say, just in terms of being a, you know, super adept, like all powerful, like not all powerful, but she's got all these acrobatic moves and she's masterful with all these weapons and she's a master explorer and all this stuff. It sets her up as a character as like, this is somebody I think would be really cool to be, as opposed to this is somebody that I really identify with. And right. I think that's probably like a lot of games these days are taking that other tact.
There has
like,
to be, I mean, to be the Tomb Raider Lara Croft, there has to be a air of something special. Like she has, you know, like ties to aristocratic background and she's very well educated and she's also an acrobat. And I think that was irrelevant. Like the whole argument that they needed to reinvent her or whatever. No, you didn't need to reinvent her. You wanted to.
Right.
And that's
right.
Great. You know what? I'm all for you guys having a creative vision and you guys wanting to do that. And God bless you. Have a great fucking time with it. But don't try to sell me on it because I don't buy it.
Right. I mean, in part of this article or this interview, they were saying that, you know, they were tired of telling that same story. They had no more stories to tell the original Lara Croft. I think it comes to a point that I was just thinking about. We in our games, I mean, this still happens, but a lot of the franchises that we remember, we were playing as superheroes, whereas now we're playing as survivors.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what these reboots and a lot of this stuff is trying to do.
If they had no more stories to tell, then they sure as hell can't take her back to her roots, because remember, they don't have any more stories to tell. So I guess that kind of leaves them back at square one.
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, I thought it looked okay.
But like Indiana Jones, I mean, like take another IP that's very similar to Lara Croft. Part of what makes him so charming is he's always getting the living crap kicked out of him in every movie.
True.
Like, you know, there's certain times where you're like, dude, here's Andy getting his ass beat again.
But the difference, I think, okay, and here's a good thing. The Crystal Skull, whatever the fuck that piece of shit was called, that movie, there was no peril to it at all. You know what I mean? And I think that it came to a point where it's like, you know, you always knew no matter what situation they were put in, there was never any danger of anything ever happening to them. And that game and that movie didn't work out very well in terms of that. This, I think they're trying to go the other way where they're making her a survivor. So I'm interested to see what they're going to do. But as someone who I know, Garnet, you are a huge fan of the franchise, I do not see you looking at this and saying, oh, that's my next Tomb Raider game.
Nah.
Yeah.
But I will face the peril alone.
You will?
Yes. You have no choice.
Castle Anthrax.
So Little Big Planet was one of the games that was available from the PlayStation Network when you registered for the Welcome Back program.
How'd that work out for him?
Apparently, it attracted 1.5 million new users since the PlayStation outage.
Boom!
Sorry, I just like...
Goes the dynamite.
Boom goes the dynamite. So the success of the game as a free title is a little ironic, because if you remember a couple of years ago when Phil Harrison was still at Sony, he was talking about how when they were introducing Little Big Planet that the game should be free and it should be a business model where the game is available for everyone and it should all be based on downloadable content. And the game has a slew of downloadable content. Over 130 add-ons are available for the game, ranging from 99 cents to $5.99. So it turns out that giving this game away for free and getting those 1.5 million new people playing this game could end up making Sony a whole heck of a lot of money.
Good. I mean, I think there certainly was a point in time at which the Little Big Planet franchise was envisioned as a sort of Guitar Hero-like or music game-like platform in which you'd give the consumer the framework and then they'd go buy what they wanted to play around in it. And then at some point in time, they went the other direction and went, you know, to the, well, we'll sell boxed updates and then we'll do DLC on top of it because that's what works. And you know, maybe when Sony decided to buy Media Molecule, that's also part of what figured into the whole equation.
It's possible. Now, moving on to Uncharted, there was... A movie going to be in development by David O. Russell, who did, I believe he did The Fighter, right?
Yes,
David O. Russell?
Yes, he did.
Don't look at me. You know, that's one of the weird things about moving to LA is people always turn to you like, oh, you know, it's that movie by so-and-so with such-and-such. What did they do again? And everybody like who's from LA, it's like they have encyclopedic knowledge of directors. You're like, you'll name a director and they'll be like, oh, you mean he did this? And he did, oh, you remember this other movie he did?
I'm sorry, like, Coppola who?
That's because everybody in this town was trying to get into the business at some point.
It's bizarre. Yeah,
yeah. When in doubt, ask your waiter, ladies and gentlemen.
That's also true.
Because they're about to go to an audition. So there was going to be a movie made by David O. Russell starring Mark Wahlberg in the Uncharted franchise, but that has since fallen through. And now Neil Berger is taking over the project and has said recently that the new Uncharted movie that he is going to start writing, because they're throwing away the original script, is going to be very much focused on the game franchise itself without changing much. It's going to be based on the original. The reason why I put this story in here is, do you want to see a complete video adaptation, a film adaptation of a game that you've already played through?
Is this something you mean that interests do I want to see the game? Do I want to see the movie of the game, much like we see the game of the movie?
Yes.
No, not really.
It seems it seems weird, right?
Yeah, it does seem weird.
I don't understand.
Although, of the games that you could model a movie after, Uncharted was basically, you know, the structure of that game,
sure,
the dramatic narrative, is an action movie.
It's like Indiana Jones.
It's Indiana Jones. So you take out, you know, the protracted shooting sequences, add in some more character development, that sort of stuff.
But you know what? Unlike Crystal Dynamics, I think that there's a wealth of opportunity of ideas for archaeological exploration and myth exploration. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's all Sci-Fi Channel and Bravo and a bunch of those other cable channels doing all their reality shows. I mean, they've got entire series that run all time on, like, exploring the myth of blah, 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 blah.
Do you think that Uncharted is more successful in telling stories because they don't necessarily focus on the character of Nathan Drake and more on the situation he's in, whereas Tomb Raider focuses way too much on Lara Croft?
Oh, no, I think they made Nathan a great character.
No, he's a great but the story is about the adventure he's going on rather than him, whereas I think Lara Croft's storylines typically tend to focus more on her as a character.
Oh, you do?
I mean, to me, it just seems like that. I wonder if that's the disparaging difference between the two. Anyway, so Berger said that Nathan Fillion is one of the people, obviously, who people would love to see in the film, that he thinks he's a great actor and that there's a lot of good actors that don't look like Nathan Drake that could play that character. Personally, I think I love Nathan Fillion, Canadian, so I'm buying him 100%. Might be a little old looking for
that. Really good for, like, Shia LaBeouf.
I don't know if you ever watched Psych, but James Rodet.
Oh, my God.
Jeff is leaving. All of a sudden, Shia LaBeouf. Jesus Christ.
That was sort of
so much shit. Oh, no. You know what? I'm going to start a thread on Shaq News today telling you that you are out of your fucking mind. And we're going to start that soon because that's going to do it for the news this week.
All right. So that just leaves us with finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
All right, we have the very dramatic entry there. We'll throw it to Jeff.
My finishing move is that Fruit Ninja is now free on the Android App Store. So if you're like me and you haven't played it yet, you can download it and see if you're excited about that awesome Kinect version.
I'd say, you know what? I'm actually just going to wait until I can spend $10 on it. I'd rather wait and spend $10 on it. You know what?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to still do.
You are so
that's what I do.
Shit.
So either this will be like, wow, I have to play the big version, or this will be like, well, I already have Fruit Ninja. What the hell do I need to pay $10 for?
I want to watch Garnet swipe at his television and just chop it in half by accident. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you're not supposed to actually hold a knife, right?
You know,
no. Dude, if Fruit Ninja Kinect came with a samurai sword, though, I might buy it.
All over that shit like a fat kid on a pancake.
Yep.
Yeah, that is, you love that, don't you?
Fat kids love pancakes. Fuck
you
it.
You love that. You know what? I'm going to make Zav go last.
What?
All right. Wait, you can go last. You can go next if you want. I'm going to make Zav go last. Mine's real easy. If you haven't heard enough of me talking already, first part of next week, Pixel Junk Radio is going to come out, on which they also graciously hosted me on that. We had a great time. It's kind of long. I have no idea how much it's going to get edited down to. There's... like, if you haven't listened to Pixel Junk Radio, it's pretty hilarious. It's mostly just some friends that work there having a good time talking about stuff that they do, and then occasionally talking about Pixel Junk stuff. However, in this one, there's a really good conversation towards the end where Dylan, who's the president and founder of Q Games, talks about his approach to the question of why designers, especially designers like himself, really only want to develop for a single platform, and why multi-platform development is just a really, they see it as a hindrance to them being achieving the maximum potential of their games. So,
and you mean specific to one particular title, not their general philosophy?
Yeah. I'll leave it for him to talk about. But basically, what he's talking about is, and again, like we talked about earlier, is like those guys are really into their coding, and they take a lot of pride in their work. And basically, it boils down to, if you're going to write for a system, you have to write for that system, and you write, and the entire game develops around what does the platform I'm going to build it on do really well, how does the development pipeline work in it, and how do I get the absolute, how do I wring the absolute most out of that and
like concurrent development, he's arguing, sort of saps the creative juice and the energy.
Well, I mean,
out
we didn't
your...
I'll let you listen to it. We didn't, okay. Basically the argument was that versus like an Unreal Engine where it works on every platform, but you know nobody's optimizing it to the best. And then you also always have that stupid argument of like the first thing someone asks you is, oh, which platform does it run better on? And, you know, like the designer, they don't ever want to have a worry about that, because they want to give you this game that they put so much fucking work into and have you get that great experience.
Yeah. Well, my finishing move, speaking of great experiences, if you're at Comic-Con right now, since Jeff isn't here, I'll promote it for him. I know the TRS guys have their panel tonight. If you're listening to this on Friday, go to Comic-Con, figure out, I think it's 7, what is the room number?
7AB, I think was
7AB.
What it was.
Look it up in your profile booklet thing that
profile.
I don't know, your Facebook. I don't know. Yeah, look it up in the man. The booklet for
my Twitter.
Figure out where
Friendster calendar.
totally rad shows panel. Fuck you both. Totally rad shows panel going on. I unfortunately won't be there. I'm driving to San Francisco this weekend. And also, since I'm throwing out a plug, I'm going to say go to shacknews.com for all your gaming news.
Yes, you should. Yes. The new River page, actually. We're pretty happy about it.
Yes.
Kind of like it.
When we're not yelling at each other about it, we
shacknews.com/news.
And oh, yes. Others. If you go to shacknews.com now, there is a button there. Week in Confirmed. There's the archive of Week in Confirmed.
Wait. We have an archive now?
We have an archive
dun, dun,
now.
Dun.
This is what we do when you leave. We get things done, Garnet. And
sweet.
So we have an archive. You just click on the Week in Confirmed button. You can find all of the past episodes of Week in Confirmed, all of the videos, images, everything.
Special thanks goes out to I Come to Shanghai, Sam Friegert, and Robert Ashley. Do check out their website, which we will have links to in the show notes, and pick up their album. It's great music. Obviously, you heard a sample track. The tracks are actually way longer than that. These are all really long cuts. That was about a 3-minute cut from a track that's ultimately almost seven minutes long. So it's really like music-y music.
Mm-hmm.
If that, it's like, no, we got newsy,
like
news.
We got newsy,
like
news.
Newsy news. Yeah.
It's music. It's musicians making real music. It's good stuff. You should get behind it. And then my little brother also asked me to thank everybody, because your support got him up over $500 for the Children's Hospital. So he gets
awesome
to go ride. Thanks very much. That's still open for another week, but he's set in great shape. Del Rio will be out on Wednesday, July 27th at local sports bar. That's at Pico and La Brea here in the Los Angeles area. The doors open at 10 p.m. So go see the man behind the glass. You going to be behind the glass while you're there? No.
No.
Such a dissipation.
Not so much.
Such a dissipation just for you to say.
All right, coming up next week, Jeff will be back. We'll get a big Comic-Con report. I may or may not play the copy of NCAA football that dropped on my desk today.
Finally.
Yeah, I don't know. What else? What are you guys going to... You guys looking forward to anything for next week we can tease up for anyone being interested in?
I'm going to be playing a little bit more Black Ops. No, I'm kidding.
I'm going to be playing
Stretch this. Yourself, buddy. Like
you know what? I got to play Shadows of the Damned because I bought it. Haven't played it yet.
You that's should. It's awesome.
That's going to be my goal.
I would
goal.
Be glad to talk more about that game because I really, really love it.
Got
to
play it.
And I'll be playing some of this indie game called Akron, which is an RTS with a time travel mechanic.
I remember. We'll have a report on that on Shack News and the Indie Games Channel blog.
Yep.
All right. That's it, folks. Thanks very much for joining us. That's your Weekend Confirmed, and it is my show, so I can say it, right? Is it okay if I say it?
You're good to go.
All right. Till next week, we are Ghost.
The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine.
Try to stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a distance.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.